coming up next after the CBS News.
Swimming in your lips, tasting infinity, a moment is all.
The program you have just enjoyed is a previously recorded broadcast.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hey, this is Hal. We're obviously having a problem with that feed from CBS. Let me check into that and see what's going on. Folks, apologize for that. Clearly, there's a problem with the CBS feed.
Hey again, it's Hal. We are having problems getting CBS News. We're working to get that for you. Peter B. will be up at 3:06 regardless.
What is it, honey?
Well, I'm not sure, but it's a lot lower than it was this time last year.
Oh, that's a big difference, is right.
It's time to see what going green can do with Eco Options products from the Home Depot. Through April 30th, get special deferred financing store-wide, including new Energy Star appliances, when you use your Home Depot consumer credit card. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only. See store for details.
At Mercedes-Benz, we've recently engineered a great new way for you to own a Mercedes-Benz. It's called the Mercedes-Benz Certified Pre-Owned Event. Every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz features an extensive 155-point inspection and lifetime roadside assistance, so you know it's all Mercedes-Benz through and through. Get limited-time financing now through April 30th. And remember, if it's not at your authorized Mercedes dealer, it's not a certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz.
See dealer for complete details on warranty coverage and roadside assistance. Abbreviated inspection applicable to vehicles less than 15 months old or less than 18,000 miles.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
The Peter B. Collins Show beaming your way from San Francisco, blanketing the west coast from Monterey all the way to Seattle. Great to have you listening wherever you are, whatever time of day it is, whatever device you use. Yeah, we got podcasts. You can grab a podcast. Link is on the homepage at peterbcollins.com. Lots to talk about today. Journalist Robert Perry will kick off the show in a moment from consortiumnews.com. We're going to talk about the state of the Democratic campaign and also the Rent-A-Generals on television, and how PBS became the first network to actually cover this. Later this hour, Brian Katulis from the Center for American Progress checks in. We're going to talk about the disclosure about more information on the alleged nuclear site in Syria. Call me suspicious, skeptical. We'll also talk about Hillary Clinton's latest comments about Iran, the promotion of General Petraeus, and probably some other things about Iraq. Our second hour is devoted to food issues. You know, there are food riots going on around the world and shortages that are linked to our move to biofuels. Rachel Smolker will join us from the Global Justice Ecology Project. And then we're going to go live to Brazil and talk with Maria Luisa Mendonca. Or is it Mendonca? We'll find out. Then a celebrated Canadian farmer who took on the GMO giant Monsanto has almost won. I mean, with a giant like Monsanto, when you come away with a settlement out of court and they pay your legal fees and they don't require you to remain silent, well, that's a victory. Percy Schmeiser will join us from Saskatchewan. And in our third and final hour, we're going to take a look at the electoral process in this country. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com and his colleague Rebecca Mercuri testified in Washington this week about our flawed electoral system. We're also going to get details from Brad on problems with the voting in Pennsylvania just the other day. You can call this program if you're listening live. Just pick up the phone and dial 1-888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And if you're listening when we're not live, I understand that. A lot of people do. You can drop me an email. That's peter@peterbcollins.com. Robert Perry, a longtime Washington journalist who broke many of the Iran-Contra stories back in the 80s for AP and Newsweek. His latest book is called Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. And he owns his own press now. It's consortiumnews.com on the web. A lot of great reporting there. And I encourage you to support them with your checkbook if you possibly can. Bob, how are you today?
Good, Peter. How are you?
Oh, I'm okay. You know, a lot going on, and that makes it exciting and challenging all at the same time to try to cover everything. I wanted to get your thoughts. You headlined a story after the Pennsylvania primary called Campaign 1988 Lives. Is this like deja vu with Poppy all over again?
Well, I think there are certain similarities that are kind of troubling that we've, many people felt that with all the crises facing the United States, the war in Iraq, the economy, the environment, global warming, and all these truly pressing issues that are they're really at crisis point and need to be addressed, that we might not have one of those distracted kinds of campaigns where we focus on. In the case of 1988, there was, if you remember, people sort of remember the Willie Horton story about this black convict who had been allowed out on a Massachusetts furlough program and had raped a white woman, and that was sort of laid on Michael Dukakis, the Massachusetts governor, and became a big issue.
Right.
But even before that, there was the question of Michael Dukakis having vetoed a compulsory Pledge of Allegiance law in Massachusetts, so he was painted as kind of un-American, and Poppy Bush made a point of pledging allegiance to the flag at the convention, and then went to a flag factory, and so we had that kind of politics, which was sort of defined really by 1988, where you have the real Americans, the good Americans, and the other, those not quite patriotic, not quite decent Americans, and Dukakis with the funny name was put into that category. And now we're seeing kind of a repeat, and I think to some degree we've seen the American voter, the Democratic voters in this case, be distracted by those kinds of issues, whether Barack Obama wears an American flag pin in his lapel or not.
And Bob, one listener emailed me and said that, I don't know where the citation came from, but it's actually a violation of flag protocol to have a flag lapel pin. The exceptions are for police officers and emergency crews who have them sewn onto their uniforms. They're not lapel pins. They are fabric. But apparently, there is a minor issue there, that this is a technical violation of our rules of flag etiquette and love.
Well, I think it's a fair point, although it's obviously a pretty common thing now to wear flag lapel pins to sort of show patriotism. And after 9/11, a lot of people did. At that point, I was working at Bloomberg News, and they were passing them out to journalists. And journalists really are supposed to remain, more neutral than that. But even that was seen as sort of something that some journalists were doing. You'll still see it. You'll see Lou Dobbs, for instance, on CNN wearing a flag lapel pin. But many politicians did. And I think what Obama has said is he did for a while. And then he felt that President Bush was misusing the flag and misusing patriotism to justify actions that went against what America really stands for, and violating the Constitution and engaging in aggressive war and so forth, that he stopped. But that was first really raised, not on the Internet, as Charlie Gibson of ABC said, but the big point of that was made in the New York Times by their new correspondent, William Kristol.
Wait. That's an insult to correspondents. He's an op-ed columnist.
He's an op-ed columnist. Okay. But he was the one who sort of raised it in a high-profile way, and since then it's been picked up.
The thing Gibson was referring to on the Internet is a picture taken from Iowa where Obama and Richardson and Hillary are on a straw stage, and the other two candidates have hand over heart, and Obama doesn't. Now, this is way out of context, and who can explain why the other two were in position and he wasn't? Either the pledge had been completed or it hadn't started yet, but it's just one of those ridiculous snapshots from time that is being used to try to incriminate and slime Barack Obama.
Right. And I think the question really has been whether the American people, whether the American voters have moved past that or not. And I think one of the aspects of the Pennsylvania primary that I focused on in the story you mentioned was that it appears to some degree they have not, that they are able to be distracted by those kinds of character issues, those kinds of issues of symbolism, but patriotism and religion, and we seem not to have moved on.
And what's really critical here is that the Clinton campaign is employing Republican tactics and moving to the right, not only of the opponent Barack Obama, but also to the right of John McCain. And I'm really concerned, Bob, A, at the comments that Hillary Clinton has made about Iran, about threatening a nuclear exchange with them, we would obliterate them, massive retaliation, expanding a nuclear umbrella over the Middle East, and there has been no critical reporting on that. And I think that is a very important issue, and I want to know where Barack Obama is on those matters. Yet, you know, we're getting flag pins and Reverend Wright's back with Bill Moyers on Friday night. It's just kind of an endless cycle of distraction.
I think you're correct. I think the we do have these major issues facing us. But the other point is it's very difficult to deal with them in a serious way. Because whenever you try to sort of deal with these subtle, complex issues in a serious way, you're baited. And you're called un-American, or you're called weak, or you call these different things. So we've had this pattern, which led us into Iraq, of constantly sort of one-upping one another in being more macho, being more aggressive, being tougher. And that's where you end up. You end up in making very bad policy decisions. And I'm afraid we're heading in the same direction on this campaign.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really sorry to see that, too. And let's criticize Obama here for a moment, too, because while he did have a response to these attacks on his patriotism, there was no emotion shown. He remains Mr. Cool, and he did say that the way he explains his patriotism is supporting veterans on the Veterans Affairs Committee. It was an adequate answer, but it wasn't delivered with any passion. And I really, as someone who refuses to wear a flag lapel pin for the same reasons that Obama once told us, I'd like to hear him with a full-throated defense of people who are patriotic but choose not to grandstand.
Right. I think you have to sort of be angry when people say you must prove your patriotism, you must prove you're a good American in these ways. And I think he is offended. I think one of the reasons he's sort of balked at doing this, and some of his advisors are now telling him you better do it. Even if Hillary Clinton doesn't, even if John McCain doesn't, you have to. He's balking at that, I think, in part because he doesn't think that just because he's a black man with an odd name, he needs to prove his patriotism. And I can understand how anybody confronted with that would get angry. And he perhaps should have shown more anger and more animation, as you say.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break and return and talk about the New York Times great story published last Sunday, only about 5 years too late, about the role of Pentagon generals in televised coverage of the invasion and occupation of Iraq. We'll continue in a moment. Your calls are welcome. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with 2 hours of talk radio all about our daily challenges, our fears, changes, crisis, addictions. Over 1,700 of them, can you believe it? Using the 12 steps, the law of attraction, whatever it takes. Join me Saturday afternoons 3 to 5 with my guests, and we'll find solutions together. The Sheila Show, Saturday 3 to 5 on KRXA, brought to you by Benji's Princess Monterey Whale Watching Trips. Open daily on Old Fisherman's Wharf, Monterey.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
You're listening to the greatest talk radio station on the planet, KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
And who will be the last to die in Iraq?
We continue now with Robert Parry from ConsortiumNews.com, and in a piece that he posted a few days ago, Bob Parry responded to the New York Times, a very well-written and extensive report in the Sunday paper, complete with the front-page color screenshots of generals on various television networks, particularly during the invasion portion of the war with Iraq. And, Bob, I've always suspected that these generals were not just hired by the networks, but were embedded by the Pentagon into the U.S. media. And the Times story gave us significant detail about that, and also pointed out that many of these generals have deep conflicts of interest. They continue to either be related to the military, or they're on the board of directors or a consultant to a defense contractor. And these are issues that are rarely, if ever, disclosed to the viewers who consume the counsel of these retired military brass.
Right. It was a good piece, and it basically demonstrated something that I guess we all should have known, and many of us suspected and kind of did know, which is that when these generals retire, they tend to go onto these boards of defense contractors, or they become consultants, and they do have financial conflicts of interest that affect how they view their relationship to the Pentagon. They don't want to offend the Pentagon. They don't want to. They want to maintain their access so they can get fast information if they need it. But this is a point I made in the piece. Is in a sense, this goes back again to the to that period of the 1970s when the after the Vietnam War, there was a sense that the press corps had undermined the war effort, which really wasn't historically true according to the Pentagon historians themselves. But it became a sort of article of faith on the right. And so when you get to the Reagan years, there becomes this attitude that there has to be a way to control the press and, in a sense, control the American people who were seen as having turned against the war. And that becomes an important theme as we go through this modern era of media and politics. And it was certainly a key element going into the Iraq War, which was to how do you sell the war, make the people excited about it, and then keep them in line so you can prosecute the war. And as the war even went badly, there was this effort by these same commentators who were privately tied to the Pentagon, acting almost as dummies, being with a ventriloquist behind them, that they were essentially passing on Pentagon talking points as honest media commentary. Mm-hmm. And so it was an important element in doing what the some on the right have wanted to do since the Vietnam War, which was to how do you control the American people? And the way they figured out how to do it was through the American media, and one part of it was using these generals to sell the war to the public.
And this blockbuster reporting, like I say, it would have been better 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, but the New York Times did a good job on it. And all week long, I haven't seen Word One broadcast on any of the commercial networks regarding this story. And on Thursday night, PBS broke the electronic media silence. And I am so proud of my friend John Stauber from the Center for Media and Democracy, the author of a book called Weapons of Mass Deception, who just laid it out. And Judy Woodruff seemed a little bit floored that this sharply critical commentary, repeatedly using the term propaganda and challenging Bob Zelnick, a former ABC News reporter, now a professor, who was saying, it's not such a big deal. And Stauber just went after him time and time again and said they recruited these people and they placed them with the media. And I just give him a lot of credit. He may not be invited back on the NewsHour anytime soon, Bob.
Well, that's true, and I think what we've seen is this very extensive effort over a long period of time to what was called back in the 80s when I was doing the Iran-Contra work. It was called "How Do You Kick the Vietnam Syndrome," and so there was this very conscious effort, and many of the documents that came out during Iran-Contra, Peter, showed how even at that earlier stage they were working on the same kinds of concepts: how to use propaganda, perception management was the mm-hmm. phrase they'd use. How do you manage the perceptions of the American people? Mm-hmm. So what we've seen now is a more advanced stage of what they were working on very, very diligently back in the 80s. And it really was a big deal. Whatever people want to say, this was an important element in selling the war because many of these TV networks relied heavily on these generals to present supposedly objective analysis when it wasn't objective at all.
Well, and another term that Stauber used probably for the first time on the PBS NewsHour in this context is psyops, psychological operations. And when you view this in its entirety, you do see the collusion between the media and the Pentagon, and the media did it for access to the war. They thought that was going to be big ratings and a way to show their journalistic chops. I got to put journalism in quotes there. And of course, the payback was that they brought on these generals that they thought added depth and gravitas to their coverage, and the editors and producers at the network seemed unconcerned about the validity of the commentary they were getting.
Well, back in the 80s, when they were doing this perception management work in the Reagan administration, they actually got PSYOP specialists from Fort Bragg to come in and advise them how to sell these things to the American people. So it really does work that way.
Robert Perry, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Peter.
ConsortiumNews.com. Drop in. Write a check if you can. Coming up next, Brian Katulis from the Center for American Progress. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by Tylenol PM Rapid Release Gels. They combine the fast pain relief of Tylenol with the sleep aid that's non-habit-forming. Use as directed. Feel better. Tylenol PM. I'm Charles Osgood. Leland Schwantes never planned on working with his hands, but he does, although work may be too strong a word.
Nobody plans on being a hand model. I make my entire living off my hands.
Nice work if you can get it.
I guess it's pretty cool to be one of, like, you know, a dozen guys on the planet that does this. It's my job.
The supermodel of hands, after this. Stopping by the grocery store today, Tylenol PM wants you to know a good night's sleep could be in the bag, a grocery bag, that is. You've probably heard that turkey can help you feel sleepy, and so can oatmeal and bananas. When pain keeps you up, Tylenol PM can help, too. It works with your body to ease the pain and help you sleep. And when used as directed, it's non-habit forming. So, put a good night's sleep on your grocery list. Feel better. Tylenol PM.
It's rush hour. The bus is packed. You've got a seat, but you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 14 more stops to go.
Oh, I should have used...
Wait, you already know you should have used Preparation H. But for extra relief, use Preparation H medicated wipes first. Unlike most ordinary wipes that just clean, Preparation H medicated wipes relieve while you clean. Then apply your Preparation H.
Move to the back, please.
Oh, I should have used Preparation H medicated wipes.
From Preparation H, the relief expert, uses directed.
It's easy to spot Ellen Surratt. She's the one wearing the gloves.
These hands have not seen the light of day for, I'd say, about 15 years.
So you wear gloves every single day?
I wear gloves every day, all day.
People must think that's rather odd.
I get all sorts of crazy looks. People think I'm crazy, mostly. That's the first reaction I get.
Crazy like a fox.
I can make anywhere from $100 an hour to thousands of dollars for an hour, depending on what the client is and what the visibility of the product will be and how long they're going to be using it. So I can make a good amount in one day.
Ellen does not work with her hands. How Susan Copeland asked her.
Do you cook?
No cooking.
Cleaning?
No cleaning.
Raking?
No raking. No.
Cutting?
No cutting. No knives. Knives, no. No scissors, no knives.
If you want to know why she is the supermodel of hands, Ellen will be more than happy to tell you.
I am the supermodel of hands because my hands are flawless. They're poreless, veinless, hairless, flawless, perfect skin tone, very hydrated. They're actually very soft. There's no age spots. There's no freckles. They're just like the perfect hand next door. If there was a perfect hand, this would be the hand.
You can see the perfect hand and the face that goes with it when I see you on the television come Sunday morning on CBS. The Osgood File. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Make this the year you become personally acquainted with the May family and Jim's Restaurant at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.50 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
33 minutes into the hour, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. And I'm your humble host, the guy they named his show after. Returning to our program today, Brian Katulis, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress in Washington. He has lived and worked in the Middle East for National Democratic Institute and Freedom House, and he has talked with us many times before. He co-authored the
proposal to redeploy our troops. I think it was Redeploy 2.0 with Lawrence Korb, Larry Korb from the center, about a year and a half ago. Brian, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm sorry I'm stuck in traffic here, but I don't think anybody in California really knows about traffic, do you guys? You're not familiar with that at all, are you?
And do I have it correct that you just got back from a trip to the Middle East?
I was actually in Pakistan, which is my third trip in about 4 months out there. Very interesting dynamics going there. So I went through the Middle East, but mm-hmm. then went beyond.
Right.
I stopped in Qatar and other places, but was in Pakistan.
Okay, well then let's start with Pakistan, and then I want to talk about the newly released information about Syria and the alleged nuclear site in collusion with North Korea. The news out of Pakistan is that deals are being made between the Taliban, which apparently has at least partly agreed to a ceasefire. And the idea is that they will stop attacking, and these security forces that are in the tribal provinces, the rural areas, the very rough zones called Waziristan, they're hoping that this is going to be a kind of ceasefire that will permit the security forces to do their work. But there are skeptics, even in the Bush administration, that this is simply another effort by Musharraf to make it look like he's taking action. And, you know, the real goal of Americans is to penetrate that area and capture Osama bin Laden and his lieutenants and hopefully dismantle the al-Qaeda command structure such as it is. What is your take on this development, and does it offer any promise?
Well, I actually am a cautious optimist that this may actually maybe something here that's quite different than what Musharraf tried to do in 2006. And I think it's important to be clear that the elections that Pakistan held in February of this year, which were a complete repudiation of Musharraf's leadership, have swept into power a host of different political forces, many of whom are taking the lead on these negotiations, that it's not Musharraf that's really at the center of some of these discussions. It's a whole host of different parties, including the Awami National Party in the northwestern part of the country. And they're working with a different approach. And I think that there's some greater hope here, because I think their approach is a little different than what Musharraf tried to do. They're trying to work with some of the local tribal leaders and really build upon what I have seen and heard in my last three trips to Pakistan. A really strong anger towards some of these foreign fighters and a lot of the Taliban who had been responsible for violent acts inside of Pakistan, which were starting to hurt a lot of Pakistani citizens. So I think there's some hope here, but we should be very skeptical, because these sorts of deals can and have led to the release of some individuals that aren't high on the trustworthy scale, if you will. And I think we need to watch what happens there very carefully. Because I think it's a complicated situation. But I think there's a greater possibility for some hope here, because you have some forces that have deeper roots in these parts of Pakistan than Musharraf did.
And will it enable any greater access for U.S. or so-called coalition or NATO forces to pour over from Afghanistan into the territory of Pakistan in trying to pursue al-Qaeda leaders, including Osama?
I actually think it may actually make it less likely for that to happen. And depending on how that's constructed, that may be okay, because at the end of the day, if we really want to squeeze these foreign terrorist organizations and groups like al-Qaeda, the best way that we can do that is to get others to do that for us. And we were trying to do that with Musharraf, but part of the problem was he was a very unpopular dictator who had no ties in many parts of the Pakistan where this is a big problem. What we have now with these new elections is the possibility that some of the, for instance, I mentioned this Awami National Party. This is a Pakistani party, but it's a Pashtun party that has been close ties with Karzai, President Karzai of Afghanistan. So where I think Musharraf had a very troubled relationship with the Afghan leader, this is a party that has deeper links, and they might work more collaboratively to do what, you know, some of our military would like to do, but I think they're more effective because they speak the language, they're less of an irritant. Some of the strikes that we've done with the drones and the missile strikes have caused more problems sometimes than actually eradicated some of the threats. And I think this could be the formula for a different approach.
I understand that, and I understand your argument that proxies or other parties would be more effective and, you know, leave less of a Bigfoot footprint on the ground. At the same time, it's hard to imagine that we can really rely on warlords or, you know, factions of the Pakistani military to do what we see is necessary to do.
Yeah, again, that's why I like the, we should be cautious and have some skepticism and watch these moves carefully with a watchful eye because, but I think at the end of the day, in the broad scheme of things, if we can move to a posture where we actually have a broader base of allies and not just are solely focused and dependent on Musharraf or simply focused on what our troops can do, we'll be in a better position, I believe, to eradicate some of these lawless zones of instability where these groups thrive. And I think we should watch these developments carefully. The thing that really struck me was, and Steve Cole, who's written a lot of mm-hmm. books and articles on this, and has a new book out on bin Laden, he had a piece recently in the LA Times, which I agree with based on my most recent interviews in Pakistan, that the new leadership, the political leadership in Pakistan, has a whole set of incentives in place right now to do the sorts of things that Musharraf didn't do in 8 years. They might be able to get things done in a few months, in part because they want to prove to the world that they're a reliable ally and partner, and also prove that Musharraf and a simply Musharraf-centric policy was the wrong approach for the U.S. to take.
We're talking with Brian Katulis from the Center for American Progress. The Peter B. Collins Show today sponsored by Polypoint Press and John Gorenfeld's new book about Reverend Moon and the Washington Times propaganda machine. The book's called Bad Moon Rising, and you can get a preview. There's a video on the web. It's pretty memorable. You can see Reverend Moon with some of your favorite Washington characters. And the website is thekingofamerica.com. That's thekingofamerica.com. Brian Katulis, next I wanted to ask you about the incident that occurred last September. On the 6th of September, Israel struck by air at a facility in Syria near the town of Al-Kibar and not far from the Euphrates River. And there's been a lot of speculation about this over the last few months because there was dead silence from Washington and from Israel about why they hit it. And then Syria denied that it was a nuclear facility. And it's been kind of a stalemate. And then there's been a PR offensive this week from the Bush administration. CIA released photographs that they allege show the construction of a nuclear facility modeled after the one in Pyongyang in North Korea. And they are accusing North Korea of proliferating nuclear technology to Syria. Now, there are major skeptics here and some doubts that we have to acknowledge in the same breath. And I'll cite Republican Congressman Peter Hoekstra of Michigan, who is deeply annoyed that the full intelligence committee was not briefed on these issues shortly after they happened. And there was such a briefing this week, but he says he's very annoyed, and he said, I think many people believe that we were used by the administration. So I join the ranks of skeptics here. There is no radioactive footprint or other evidence that has been offered to support the idea that this was a nuclear facility. And so there are a lot of mysteries. What is your take on this? And do you have any skepticism or concerns about the motives of the Bush administration in bringing this forward at this particular time?
Well, of course, I have a lot of skepticism about much of what the Bush administration does on national security, as most Americans should, given how they've handled these issues. To me, first I think it's important to note that there's a lot of murkiness here. There's not a lot of clarity. Some of that is intentional. Some of that is also just the nature of how some of this information may have been acquired. I think what we do know is that there seems to have been, and you have independent nuclear experts affirming this also from based on their own research, David Albright and a few others, there seems to have been some sort of reactor-type facility being built. Now, it's important to stress that whatever was being built first was nowhere close to being anything that could produce a nuclear weapon. Second, it seemed like this reactor was quite similar to one in Yongbyang. And I think there's enough evidence out there to say, yes, there was something going on there. Perhaps it wasn't, and it almost seems like it definitely wasn't anywhere near to being a threat, and a threat that required some sort of military strike at that point. And the other problem is, given all of this other evidence that's out there, the fact that the officials didn't go to the International Atomic Energy Agency is a big problem, too. So I think there's sufficient cause for concern about what was actually happening there, even greater cause for concern about why months later after this incident all of this information is being rolled out. I think it's tremendously unhelpful. The administration, when asked about this, I think a senior intelligence official said, well, we were concerned that if we fully unveiled this information, it might motivate Syria to adopt a military posture and force them to kind of respond publicly. To me, that sounds like a lame excuse, and I'm deeply concerned that knowing what I know is happening in the six-party talks with North Korea and the stalemate that's created there, I'm worried that this is being used, the release of this information, for a number of different reasons, and that we should have had more information shortly after this incident.
And this seems to be, if you'll forgive the expression, a dual-use story, because on the one hand, it pushes back Syria, which has been making overtures to Israel about trying to, you know, soften their position and move forward on some peace talks. And it's also a reflection of the Bush administration's frustration with North Korea, and they were hoping to sew up an agreement there that Bush could point to as part of a legacy. It's hard for me to figure out, Brian, is this about Syria or is this about North Korea?
Well, it could be about both, and then also I'll throw a third one in there, Iran. And all of this and the release of this information, I think, sends signals. It sends a signal to North Korea. The Bush administration is trying to say, or some parts of the Bush administration, you need to come clean about your full nuclear activities, and I think that's not necessarily a bad thing to do. We need to do that with AQCON and Pakistan, and there are a lot of problems out there in proliferation, and I don't think the Bush administration's approach to it has helped.
Yeah, and outing Valerie Plame didn't help either. She was working on those issues at the CIA.
Well, and this is a function, when all is said and done, when historians look back on this period of President Bush's stewardship of national security, they're going to see a commander-in-chief who really has politicized national security unlike any other president in the history of this country, using it as a partisan wedge issue. And I think that's really unfortunate because we've taken our eye off the ball. So it also could be a signal, of course, to Syria. And look, I think, you know, my view is that there are a lot of questions that Syria needs to answer, even if this is a very rudimentary sort of facility.
Mm-hmm.
What was actually happening there? And I think we need more transparency. And then finally, with everybody's concerns about Iran and the advances it's making in its own nuclear research, and whether that's just simply a civilian electricity generation capacity or something else, I think mm-hmm. the Bush administration may have another motive there, too, to try to send a signal to Iran, as, you know, that has never really fallen from their agenda, because it's a concern that the Israelis have and many other countries in the Middle East,
yeah.
And Iran is moving forward on its research.
And Israel stated that its satellite evidence indicated an existential threat to Israel because this facility might soon be ready for operation. And then in the same breath, in Thursday's New York Times, it says, well, it would have taken at least 18 months before any fuel was cooked. And again, there is no evidence of any uranium or plutonium, you know, picked up from our intelligence at this site. We're going to take a break and return with Brian Katulis. Brian, we're going to hang up and let you switch phones, and we'll catch up with you on the other side of the break. Brian Katulis from the Center for American Progress. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years. and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show. Weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's A Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour. Next hour, we're going to focus on food. There's a worldwide food crisis, food riots in Haiti, in parts of Africa. And we're going to talk about the impact of America's conversion to biofuels on the world food supply. I never met, but in a way I know. Didn't think that you could get so much from a picture show. And among our guests in the next hour, Percy Schmeiser, a feisty Saskatchewan farmer, that's from Canada, who got in a pickle with Monsanto because some of their Roundup Ready seeds blew onto his property and they came in and sued him over it. Story's got a happy ending. Percy will tell us next hour here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And we'll hook up with Brian Katulis in just a moment. We switched phones. He was on his cell phone stuck in traffic, and we thought during the break he could switch to a landline, and we're still trying to get back in touch with him. Jake is on the line from Eureka. Hey, Jake.
Hey, Peter, how's it going?
Doing okay, thank you.
Hey, I'd like to bring up the comments yesterday from Peter Hoekstra, the Republican congressman from Michigan, who I believe is the ranking Republican on the House Intelligence Committee.
I think you're right.
He said that he was extremely upset with the Bush administration for not giving him this information, 8 or 9 months ago. My question for you, Peter B., is what's going on there? Why was the Bush administration keeping this information even from Hoekstra?
Well, they only briefed the chairs of the, or at least the chair and the ranking member of each committee. So I think Hoekstra was briefed in the fall. His frustration is that the full committee wasn't briefed, and he said there wasn't really anything new. Brian Katulis, can you offer any speculation on this?
Well, I mean, this would be pure speculation, but there, on all intelligence matters, and again, all of my skepticism about the Bush administration and why and how they use information, on most intelligence matters, there's also a real sensitivity in terms of how broadly you can share some information. If you look at the video or if you look at the photos here, a number of people risk their lives to get whatever those images tell us, and I'm not, certain that they tell us much. But people were on our payroll or on somebody's payroll to do that. And the more broadly you share some of that information, the more risks that you have that it would leak out and then actually lead to endangering people's lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the way, you mentioned Valerie Plame, and that was an intentional leak and endangered somebody's life. Similarly here, whenever you share more broadly, and I'm not apologizing for anything the Bush administration does, I'm just trying to explain why possibly there could be a legitimate reason, but I'm skeptical here. I'm skeptical as to why they really held off on sharing it more.
Yeah, and their secrecy and the control of information. Just look at the last national intelligence estimate about Iran. That was kicking around for up to a year before it was finally forced out, and it seems the intelligence community pushed the Bush-Cheney team to do that. Brian, I want to turn to the remarkable, hawkish, and in my view, reckless remarks that have been made by candidate Hillary Clinton over the past week about Iran. On several interviews, she has talked openly about a nuclear exchange with Iran, threatening to nuke them if they launched any kind of a nuclear assault on Israel. First and foremost, they don't have that capability today, and the best estimates are that even if every centrifuge at Natanz was working properly, that they couldn't develop a weapon for 3 to 5 years. And I'm really shocked that she would use this language, moving to the right of McCain and in some cases Bush and Cheney, to take these very public positions about a threat that does not currently exist.
Yeah, I'm personally disappointed myself, too, because that combined with the television ad she used in Pennsylvania that used the image of Osama bin Laden, and it's back to this old style of fear and threats and talking about national security challenges in ways that I don't think are ultimately helpful for us in the long run. And in particular, these remarks on Iran, should she become president by some sort of slim chance, because it still seems very difficult for her to get there, these remarks have resonance when she's in power and can actually serve as an impediment to moving forward on getting the deal done with Iran and in terms of fully and comprehensively addressing their nuclear research program. So I'm in full agreement, and I think it just coarsens our discourse on national security. I think there's a better way to talk about these issues rather than using words like obliterate. I think it's just really dangerous.
Yeah. And Brian Katulis, we could talk for a lot longer, but I only have time for one more question here, and that is about the promotion of General Petraeus to CENTCOM commander, subject to Senate approval, which is unlikely to be withheld. And my biggest concern here is that the effort to buy time in Freedman units has worked. And we now have Congress ready to approve $170 billion more for the occupation of Iraq. And I just find this whole cycle very dismal. And I give the Bush administration credit for the skillful way that they have maneuvered to buy time and to just push everything beyond this president's term.
Yeah, I think the Petraeus move is part of an overall strategy to set some facts on the ground and freeze into place a current approach. That combined with the attempts to get a long-term security agreement bilaterally with the Iraqi government, and then also going as far flung as Pakistan, not really moving and changing our policy as a result there. They want to basically run out the clock and then to set in motion some things that might make it difficult for them.
Yeah. And the other piece was that Fallon made it clear he wasn't in favor of a military confrontation with Iran, and it seems Petraeus has not expressed that same view. Brian Katulis, thank you very much. I appreciate your time today. We'll talk again.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Katulis from the Center for American Progress. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Podcast is available. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Is your bank account shrinking?
Clearly, we are in a prolonged economic slump.
And for many of us, the pain begins at the pump.
Either walk or live with it.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Cammie McCormick. How do you feel about the economy? Consumer confidence is at its lowest level in 26 years.
It's almost been an economic perfect storm of economic indicators in terms of looking at gas prices, the housing market, food prices, and consumers have every right to be cautious and concerned.
Scott Krugman of the National Retail Federation, CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus, says retailers are worried.
We are paying much, much more for both gasoline and food, essential items that we need. And with people losing their jobs now, it's going to be putting a real strain on consumer spending in the weeks and months ahead.
Oil prices surged today, and gas prices are near $3.60 a gallon on average nationwide. A lot of Americans are changing their driving habits.
I just kind of go to work and come home.
That driver in the Los Angeles area, where we find CBS News correspondent Ben Tracy.
I know in some places in the country, when gas prices have hit $3.25, $3.50, that's been a shock. But out here, the average gas price is about $3.85. And in a lot of places, it's above $4. So you're talking a whole lot of money to fill up your gas tank.
And in New York, CBS News correspondent Jeff Glore is also finding outrage at the pump.
We're at a level that is very high right now, and we're at a level that some analysts feel is putting us close to this mythical tipping point. It's a tipping point that has long been discussed in the gas industry, the level where consumers and drivers radically alter their behavior.
The Bush administration hopes those tax rebates help.
This money's going to help Americans offset the high prices we're seeing at the gas pump and the grocery store.
And they're on their way.
On Monday, the Treasury Department will begin delivering the first of these tax rebates by direct deposit.
Now this.
Hi, I'm the owner of an auto body shop, and since we added Aflac to our benefits package at no direct cost to me, all my employees say the same thing. I want
Aflac.
Since we added Aflac, my whole business is running smooth.
1-800-99-AFLAC or go to aflacforbusiness.com. American Family Life Insurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from your valve stem cover.
Thank you. No cameras.
No,
wait,
hold on. You're a what?
A valve stem cover.
A valve stem?
Yeah, I cover the valve stems on your tires.
Oh.
Ah, I know your tires inside and out. Mostly out.
Well, thanks, but I'll ask my Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer about tire inflation, rotation, special offer.
Fine, then I'll just keep doing what I do best.
And that is?
Covering valve stems?
Right.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service. Come in, keep going.
Add to our economic troubles, utility bills. CBS News correspondent Sam Litzinger reports some Americans have no option but to shut off the lights.
Utility company officials say hundreds of thousands of customers could have their service cut off because the chilly economy means their finances are going into deep freeze. Jim Ullman's a credit administrator with Wisconsin Public Service.
We serve around 500,000 residential customers, and at the end of March, we saw that 65,000 had an arrearage balance. 25,000 of those were in a severe state, which means that disconnection or limiting service was a possibility.
One company says it's disconnecting as many as 650 customers in Minnesota and Wisconsin every day. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
It was a verdict that outraged some. Reaction to the acquittal of three New York detectives who stood trial for killing an unarmed black man on the day he was to be married. 23-year-old Sean Bell was killed in a hail of gunfire as he left his bachelor party. His death prompted protests over the use of excessive force. The Reverend Al Sharpton.
What we saw in court today was not a miscarriage of justice. Justice didn't miscarry. This was an abortion of justice.
Mark Cooper is one of the acquitted detectives.
I'd like to say sorry to the Bell family for the tragedy. I'd like to thank the Lord, my Savior, for today. This started my life back.
Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said today he made no progress in his talks with President Bush. He said the biggest obstacle to peace in Israel is its continued expansion of Jewish settlements. A U.S. ship contracted by the U.S. military fired warning shots at a couple of boats in the Persian Gulf. It's the latest in a string of similar incidents. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Ooh, new toy.
Watch this.
What is this?
This is a screw guide.
Uh-huh.
You put it on top, slide
right.
This over like that.
There you go.
Punch it down. Bang. Yeah. 90 degree angle. Don't blink. What are we building today, huh?
Yeah.
It's time to put the power back in your tool collection. At the Home Depot's Ultimate Power Deal event, save $30 to $400 instantly on select power tools from all our top brands. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid through 4/30 and U.S. only on power tool purchases of $149 or more. See store for details.
It's time to turn off our TVs and turn on our senses. Time to dial up the daisies and kickstart the chrysanthemums. Time to uncoil the hoses and unleash the roses. With Liquifeed Advance, the new feeder and liquid plant food from Miracle-Gro, makes feeding your plants as easy as watering and helps you remember there's a big, beautiful world out there. Miracle-Gro, it's grow time. This weekend, get to the Home Depot and get growing.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Thanks for joining us this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show, up and down the left coast. And greetings to Missoula, Montana. Around the world, people are experiencing severe problems with food supplies. In Haiti, there have been food riots over the last 2 weeks. And in certain African nations, there are problems as well. Not being felt too much in these United States, here in California, Costco has put limits on the amount of rice that one customer can buy. I think it's 20 pounds at a time. And what we're seeing here in the big picture is that China has gone from being a net exporter of rice and grain to being a net importer, and that the rest of the world has been consuming in larger quantities. There are also some distribution issues. But one of the key factors is that the United States, in its rush to develop biofuels, has driven up the cost of basic foodstuffs because we're diverting so much corn and other agricultural products into ethanol and other forms of fuel. So this hour, we're going to get a couple of different views. Later in the hour, I'm going to talk again with Percy Schmeiser. He's a farmer in Saskatchewan who got in trouble with the Monsanto Corporation. And you may know that Monsanto's tried to corner the world market on seeds. Yeah, seeds for crops. And they have cloned and otherwise genetically modified organisms to create what are called Roundup-ready seeds. And Percy will tell us more about this a little bit later. He never bought a single Roundup-ready product. It blew onto his farmland. Nonetheless, Monsanto sued him, and he fought back. There's a happy ending to this, and we'll let Percy tell you the story a little bit later. And by the way, we're having a few problems here at the studio. Our internet connection dropped. And we store all of our guest information in an online calendar file, and so we're scrambling right now, and it may affect our ability to bring in a guest in a few minutes. But Rachel Smolker joins us now, a research biologist at the Global Justice Ecology Project. She's based in Vermont, got her degree at the University of California at Santa Cruz, and then a PhD at the University of Michigan. Rachel, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, and they miss you at UC Santa Cruz. They want you to come back and see the new Grateful Dead Museum.
I'm on my way.
Rachel, what are the dimensions of the food shortages that we are seeing in some parts of the world and the repercussions of the U.S. race to develop biofuels? How is that impacting the food supply both domestically and internationally?
Yeah, well, I mean, the background of this food price rise is that there are about 850 million people who are chronically malnourished, and about 5 million children under the age of 5 die every year from starvation. So that, you know, is the backdrop against which we have started to divert crops like corn and soy into the production of ethanol for automobile driving.
Mm-hmm.
And since 2005, the price of staples like corn and soybeans have jumped something like 80%. And just in the last month, the prices of wheat and rice have risen astronomically, to the point where, you know, wheat is at a 28-year high. And
it's rippling through at the grocery store. My favorite box of cereal is over $5 now.
Yeah.
And a loaf of designer bread, you know, from one of the fancy bakeries is heading up north of $4.
Right. But, you know, this is not all the result of biofuels. It's a complex situation that, you know, the rising price of fossil fuels, you know, it impacts what it costs to farm and mm-hmm. the fertilizers that and the inputs that go into producing these crops. There's also the increasing affluence of people in developing countries eating more meat, which, you know, it takes a lot more grain to produce a pound of meat than you know, that grain could go a lot further if it was eaten directly rather than fed to a cow to fatten up a cow or something. So,
right.
So the increasing consumption of meat is also playing a big role in this rising demand for corn and soy, especially, which are used for animal feed. And on top of that, you know, the human population is growing dramatically. We add about 78 million people a year,
mm-hmm.
and we're expecting to reach about 9 billion by the middle of the century. That's a lot of people to feed.
Right.
And given that, you know, the surface of the earth is a limited area, and there's only a certain part of that that can be used for agriculture, and we've depleted the soils in a lot of places, so we're faced with desertification in places like China and other parts of the world where soils are no longer capable of producing food. And on top of that, we have dwindling water supplies. So we're really in a very tough situation. And
all those factors, pardon me, Rachel, all the factors you cited are compounded by the war in Iraq, which has caused oil prices to climb. They announced yesterday that they dropped to $116 a barrel. That's the spot quote price on the world market right now. But that increase in the cost of a barrel of oil is also related to the risk factors of the war in Iraq and the declining value of the dollar. And so we have weaker dollars chasing a more expensive product, and it is simply an upward inflationary spiral.
Yes, it is. And on top of that, because of what's happening with the economy, there's an increasing amount of speculation in commodities, in corn and soybeans and so on, as people are getting out, taking their money out of other market devices and putting them into speculating on commodities, which is also having a big effect on food prices again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very complex situation. The biofuels are definitely playing a big role in that. I mean, we diverted a lot of our corn here in the United States into ethanol production. The prediction is that next year we'll be diverting somewhere between a third and a half of our corn crop into ethanol production. And that has, a domino effect throughout the whole system. We grow more corn for ethanol. That means we're growing less soybeans. And so, down in South America, they're making up the difference with soy production there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a direct link between the price of soy on the market and deforestation in the Amazon. So, it's a very complex situation. And
all of these factors aggravate global warming.
They all aggravate global warming, which in turn reduces agricultural production. So one big mess.
We're talking with Rachel.
People are starting to realize that the whole agricultural system that we've gotten into with, multinational agribusiness companies like Archer Daniel Midland and Cargill and Bunge and Monsanto, and in a globalized agriculture system where we have heavily subsidized, farm commodity production here in the United States and in other places, and basically driven small farmers out of the practice of, it's no longer feasible for them to make a living doing growing food for people. So, this system really is very broken, and people are really waking up to that, I think, all of a sudden with this increase in food prices.
We're talking with Rachel Smolker. She is a research biologist with the outfit based in Vermont called the Global Justice Ecology Project. Their website, globaljusticeecology.org. That's globaljusticeecology.org. And Rachel, your title is biofuels specialist. So what is the way to move forward trying to wean ourselves from oil as a source of fuel? And trying to move forward with biofuels in a responsible way that values the human being and the food supply at the same level we do our automobiles.
Right. Well, as the food issue has come to the forefront, there's an increasing chorus of voices saying, well, this is just a stepping stone. We obviously, corn and soybeans really should be used for food. We have a next generation of technologies using cellulose from trees and from switchgrass and so on that will avoid this problem. But the thing is, we're not really talking just about competition over food crops. We're talking about competition for land. And we're talking about a situation where, as I mentioned, we're in a dire situation with the climate and with decreasing land availability. So that is not going to resolve the problem moving into using these other crops. In fact, there's a recent study from the University of Iowa, a modeling study, which showed that switchgrass would actually possibly increase competition for land and therefore for area to grow food crops, because farmers will make decisions based on what is profitable to them.
Mm-hmm.
And switchgrass takes a lot of room to grow. But in any case, I think, right now what people are really looking to is using trees and wood for producing hydrocarbon fuels. And that sounds really good, but we need to look at the fact that we have severely deforested the planet, and we are really dependent on those forests for regulating the climate and for regulating water resources and so on. So what's happened in the last, 50 or 100 years is that we've replaced a lot of primary forest with monoculture plantations of, industrial monoculture plantations of trees that are grown for purposes. You know, for example, in Brazil, you know, eucalyptus, which is not native to Brazil, it's native to Australia. There are huge plantations of eucalyptus that are grown for pulp and other uses.
Well, I got five ukes in my backyard. I'd be happy to donate them to the cause.
Yeah, right. Out in California, they're definitely a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the thing is we can't pretend that a monoculture plantation of introduced or genetically engineered trees is anything equivalent to a forest. It does not provide the same kind of ecosystem services, if you will, or habitat for biodiversity or any of the other things that we really need. We need to protect our forests.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break. I'm sorry, Rachel, we're going to take a break and return. That's Rachel Smolker from the Global Justice Ecology Project. And Brian's on the line right now. It looks like we're going to be able to hook up with Brazil and talk with Maria Luisa Mendonça coming up next here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Comedy Central Live presents Lewis Black.
My favorite health club is the International House of Pancakes. Because no matter what you weigh, there will always be someone there who weighs 150 pounds more than you will ever weigh. It's guaranteed. It's on the back of the menu. Read it sometime.
Lewis Black, Let Them Eat Cake Tour. May 4th at Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium. Get tickets online at LiveNation.com and through all Ticketmaster outlets. Don't miss Lewis Black, a Comedy Central Live event produced by Live Nation.
I told you I'm not happy.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Well, good afternoon. Happy Friday. Checking traffic on KRXA and not much to go with right now. Gilroy, Foothill Avenue at Wilson Way, a stall that's blocking one of the lanes. Highway 156 east of South Castroville, we've had reports of a big rig that spilled some oil, most of it on the shoulder, but partially in the right-hand lane. Kind of a slick situation. CHP and fire department headed out there to lay down some absorbent. Just drive with caution if you are going through the area. Highway 68 currently checking and stalling accident-free. 17 Santa Cruz Mountains, we have no stalls and no accidents. but look for heavy traffic when you get to the Fish Hook in Santa Cruz, and reports of heavy traffic south 101 as you leave South San Jose and head down into Morgan Hill this afternoon. This is brought to you by Orkin Pest Control, where you see one pest, you know there's more. Visit OrkinMan.com for a free online pest test. Orkin, keeping pests in their place. If you spot a traffic problem, we'd love to know about it. Give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
There is just one moon and one golden sun, and a smile means friendship to everyone. Though the mountains divide and the oceans are wide, it's a small world after all.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Yeah, it's a small world, and I don't know that that's what Disney had in mind when they made the attraction in this song. The story here is that our demand for biofuels is putting a crimp on food stocks all over the world. Prices are rising. And in third world nations where people earn a dollar a day and the cost of basic foods goes up by 15, 20, 30% in a very short period of time, this creates true hardships. We're talking with Rachel Smolker from the Global Justice Ecology Project. And Rachel, we've got Maria Luisa on the line. Would you like to introduce her and explain her role in discussing these issues? Rachel, are you there? Okay, well, I don't hear Rachel. So, Maria Luisa Mendonca, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you.
Nice to talk with you. And where are you in Brazil today?
I'm in the state of São Paulo, which is the largest producer of ethanol in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. And tell us your view of the impacts of the conversion to biofuels and the push for ethanol and how it impacts food stocks and agrarian lifestyles.
It has different types of impacts. First of all, land became very expensive in Brazil, so the price of food went up. Just to give you an idea, last year we had an increase of 25% in the price of food in Brazil, mm-hmm. and only the price of beans, which is the most traditional food in Brazil, went up 150%.
Ouch.
So this has a huge impact in a country where about 30 million people already have a problem of access to food.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think we can do as Americans to try to soften the impact on nations like Brazil?
I think that the U.S. has a great deal of responsibility because the lifestyle in the U.S. contributes to the demand for energy. In the U.S., there are about 700 cars per 1,000 people. So it's almost one person per car. So if we don't talk about a different type of lifestyle, investing on massive public transportation and thinking about a different way of organizing our urban spaces, we will never find any alternative type of energy that can fit the current demand, because anything that is now being proposed, like biofuels, also demands a great deal of land, water, and natural resources.
Right. And how is this causing further problems in terms of the rainforests and agricultural land in Brazil?
Yes, the monocropping, the expansion of sugarcane plantations to produce ethanol is destroying the savanna areas in Brazil where most of our rivers start, and it's also pushing the agricultural frontier to the Amazon region. So we see more sugarcane plantations going up north to the Amazon region, and this also pushes other types of crops like soybeans and also cattle ranching up to the north. So the pressure on the rainforest is really right now, and this is only going to make global warming worse.
Indeed. Yeah, these are all contributors, and the other factor is that when you have people who are hungry and can't earn an adequate living, they do things that lead to further devastation, like by raiding the rainforests, basically to try to put dinner on the table tomorrow.
Yes, but really, the biggest contributors to the destruction of the forest are large corporations, mining corporations, big agricultural, large landowners, big agribusinesses, and the oil companies. So what we see now is an alliance of large corporations like oil companies, large agricultural corporations, trying to present themselves as the environmental savers. And
Maria Luisa, I'm sorry, my time has expired, but thank you very much for your comments today from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Nice to talk with you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we go north of the border to Saskatchewan and talk with Percy Schmeiser.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Specious and gossipy. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. The biggest issue in Wednesday's ABC debate turns out to be ABC. A lot of viewers thought the question stank.
Do you believe that Senator Clinton has been fully truthful about her past?
Or that the questions weren't about the real challenges America faces?
Do you think Reverend Wright loves America as much as you do?
That ABC didn't seem interested in the war and the economy.
Senator Obama, I have a question, and I want to know if you believe in the American flag.
Are those bad questions? You certainly don't want to end up with a president who's an America-hating flag burner, do you? And yet, Washington Post critic Tom Shales said the debate focused on specious and gossipy trivia, stuff that was no longer news. ABC's website logged 16,000 comments, most of them critical. You disgraced the American voters and, in fact, even disgraced democracy itself, wrote one blogger. There's only one problem with these critiques. And I quote from the Associated Press Dispatch, quote, "The primetime debate was seen by 10.7 million people, the most of any debate this election cycle," unquote. Yes. And as for those 16,000 comments, I'll guess that for every angry comment, there are maybe 100 people who read them and raised the hit counts that advertisers pay for. So, Mr. Obama may complain that there are more important issues than whether he wears a lapel pin.
We are involved in two wars. For us to be obsessed with these kinds of errors, I think is a mistake.
But I'm sorry, Senator. The ratings have spoken. Now this.
And now, another reason to switch to GEICO.
Every month we get lots of letters telling us how much folks like GEICO's claim service. And I quote, "The adjuster assigned to my claim was incredible. He walked me through everything." Then there's this one. GEICO.com is very useful and lets you track your claims. And this. "I filed a claim at 4:15 on Thursday afternoon and my car was in the shop at 10 a.m. on Friday." And my personal favorite, "Easy squeezy lemon peasy."
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
It started with sightings, UFOs over Monterey Bay. I'm your host, Bob Oliver. With a quantum leap and open mind, I will take you another step further as chaos shows itself to us as truth. Saturdays at 9 p.m.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Go ahead. Take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed.
Sorry about that. I stopped our pronouncer right in the middle of his big spiel there. Here, let him finish.
The Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered. Except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
He's also occasionally clumsy with the electronics. At some fancy radio stations and studios, there's a kid behind the board, and he gets blamed whenever there's a mistake. We call that person a board operator. Here at the Peter B. Collins Show, I'm driving the tractor myself. And sometimes we run right over into the next field. And you can tell that farming metaphors are on my mind right now. It's my pleasure to introduce Percy Schmeiser from the vast metropolis of Bruno, Saskatchewan. He's a former mayor there, served in the provincial legislature, and he's a fighting farmer who took on the food giant Monsanto. They're really a chemical giant that has crossed over into the food business by trying to control the seed stocks in the world and by genetically modifying seed stocks to, make them proprietary products of the Monsanto Corporation. Percy Schmeiser, welcome back to our program.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to be back.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, and I'm pleased because we're going to have a happier ending today. The last time I talked to you, you were on the receiving end of these legal actions from Monsanto, and as I recall, the lower courts were not inclined to rule in your favor. But
that's correct. They had to take all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada to finally get a victory there that I didn't have to pay Monsanto anything, but also at the same time, the Supreme Court ruled that Monsanto's patent on a gene is valid, and wherever that gene arrives into any higher life form, they own and control it. But the big win for us was that we didn't have to pay Monsanto any money. Otherwise, they wanted about over $1 million from us.
Well, and Percy, the other good news is that you're talking to us about it. I was fearful that you might be able to make a settlement with them, but they would insist that you remain silent.
Well, that they wanted that also at the Supreme Court, and that was something that was not granted to them. And this is why Monsanto's been getting away with it with so many farmers in North America, in both our countries, where they get farmers to sign gag orders or non-disclosure statement, and then to go out and say to the public, well, there's been very few farmers that we have prosecuted, but there's literally hundreds or thousands of farmers they've taken to court or settled out of court, in many cases ruining the farmer completely. So that's how they get around it. They have farmers sign this non-disclosure statement, and even in my latest case with Monsanto now, I won that victory.
And have you become a lawyer in this process, Percy?
Well, no, not really, but I'll tell you, there's many instances I wish I was a lawyer defending myself in court, because having 10 years now being in court with Monsanto, it's a great experience, and I wish that experience on no one. It's a living hell to go through a legal battle with a multi-billion-dollar corporation who has deep pockets.
Well, and they caused you to get right down to the bottom of your pockets, I imagine.
Well, that's it. They totally tried to destroy us. They tried to seize our house, all our farmland, all our equipment by putting liens and caveats on it. And we would have lost. I wouldn't even be here today to talk to you, because they would have taken everything from us. And they lost that in court, that they could not, obtain all our possessions through infringement on patent law.
Now, for the benefit of people who didn't hear you the other times that you and I talked, Percy, let's give a little background.
Sure.
How far back does this go? Some Monsanto Roundup Ready canola seeds blew over onto your property, right?
That's right, in 1997 and 8.
Mm-hmm. And you did not invite this, you didn't cause it, you've never purchased Roundup Ready seed product, or I don't imagine you use Roundup even.
No, it was introduced in 1996 in North America, GMOs, and for principal crops in both our countries, and that was in canola, or some people call it rapeseed, corn, cotton, and soya. But in 1998, Monsanto that was the time they laid the lawsuit against me, my wife, because they said we were growing their GMO canola without a license from them. They admitted that we had never bought their seed, but because they had contaminated it, rate of contamination didn't matter if it was 1% or 5%. They said they now owned our seeds and plants, all our research and development, because we were research people in developing new varieties of canola. They said they now owned it, and we had no right to use our seeds or plants again because of the patent law. They own our plants because of the patent on their gene.
Now, Percy, and by the way, Percy has a great website where you can read more about this, and you can even help him with his legal expenses if you're in a position to do that. It's percyschmeiser.com, and I'll spell that, P-E-R-C-Y-S-C-H-M-E-I-S-E-R, percyschmeiser.com. Now, Percy, how did they ever gather the evidence that your crops had been contaminated by their genetically modified Roundup Ready canola seeds?
Well, what happened was that I have 2 miles of mainline power lines going past my land, and it's a procedure for the power corporation to sway around the power poles, or they pay a farmer to do so. And in 1997, it was noticed, after this was done, probably done for about 15 years, and it was done with Monsanto's Roundup herbicide, and there were some plants that didn't die, canola plants. Not many, but there was some on a small section of that power line along the roadway, and that's how Monsanto then made some tests along the ditch, and they said that there could be some of that in our crop, because we were using our seed from year to year, and we used our seed from all our different fields in 1998, and that's when they laid the lawsuit. And like I said, the rate of contamination didn't matter. In several fields, there wasn't even no contamination, but the judge ruled that even there's a probability that there could be some in our seed because we were using our seed from year to year, and therefore we had no right to. We didn't own it anymore because under patent law it became the ownership of Monsanto. Really what I'm saying is this. Any farmer, whether you're an organic farmer or conventional farmer, could wake up tomorrow morning, no longer own his seeds or plants, or be able to use your seeds or plants again if you are contaminated by whatever means, if it's cross-pollination with the pollen flown in the wind or carried by whatever, water or wind, or also direct seed movement, which was the biggest source of contamination, with seeds blown in the wind, transportation by farmers, and seeding and so on.
What about birds? Don't birds move seeds around too?
Oh, sure. It passes. Like we have a lot of geese, a lot of ducks on the northern plains of the U.S. and the prairies here in western Canada. And it passes through animals. It passes through geese. So there is, they used to say that all you'd have to do is keep a bumper strip of 50 feet, then it was 100 feet, then it was a mile, then 2 miles, and so on. Now they have admitted there is no safe distance. It can, how far can a seed move or transported or pull and flow? So there is no safe distance, and so that leaves there is no such thing as containment and no such thing as coexistence, because the GMO gene is the dominant gene, and it takes over whatever species of seeds or plants it gets into. But the danger of GMOs, genetic modified organisms, that if you introduce it like into a canola plant, comes from the family of plants, the brassica family, and you have very close relatives as well as distant relatives like wild mustard, close relatives, turnips, radishes, cauliflower, and so on. And now it's also cross-pollinating into those market garden crops, making more crops organic farmers no longer can grow organically. So it's the Pandora's box. Once you introduce it, it's over. And as far as we know today yet, there's no calling back.
Now, Percy Schmeiser, you have more or less prevailed in these legal actions brought against you by Monsanto. But you have no way of preventing Roundup Ready seeds from crossing over onto your property in the future, do you?
That is totally correct. And I should maybe just back up a little bit. When the Supreme Court ruled in my favor that we didn't have to pay Monsanto anything, they also ruled, though, that Monsanto patent on a gene is valid, and wherever that gene arrives in any higher life form, they own and control that life form. And I think Monsanto at that time thought they had a great victory, but now it has come home to haunt them. Because if you own and control a life form and you put it into the environment where I explained you cannot control it, then there's now a liability issue, and that is now coming home to haunt not only Monsanto, but all the companies that have introduced GMOs. And to further elaborate on that is that we were watching very closely after the contamination in 1997 and 1998. And in 2005, in the fall, we noticed that on a field that we were doing mustard research that there was some canola plants appearing. And so we did tests, and we were quite sure that they were Monsanto's Roundup Ready canola plants. And we notified Monsanto, and indeed, they came out and checked and tested, and they verified it was their Roundup Ready GMO canola plants on our field. Now, in all the courts that I had fought in the previous case, Monsanto always said all a farmer had to do, they made it sound very big or very good, notify them, and they would come and test and remove the offending plants. So they came and tested, and sure enough, it was theirs. And they said to us, "What do you want done?" And I said, "I want those plants off this 50-acre field, otherwise we cannot use it for research." They agreed to that. And then several days later, we get a notification from Monsanto that said, "Well, oh, by the way, you have to sign a release form." And we said, "What are you talking about?" And they said, "Well, in this release form, first of all, you have to sign a gag order. You cannot talk to the press to anyone what has happened or what we are going to help you. And secondly, you and your wife or a member of your family can never, ever take Monsanto to court again for the rest of your life, irregardless how much you they contaminate us in the future." Well, you can imagine when I told him in no uncertain terms, I said, "Your property is on ours. Get it off of there." And he said, "No, we won't unless you sign this agreement." So we said we would not sign it. I then had some of my neighbors help us, and we removed the plants ourselves physically from a 50-acre field, and we then sent Monsanto a bill, which came to about $660.
Yeah.
They refused to pay it, and then we took Monsanto to court, or they said they would pay it unless we signed this agreement. We then took Monsanto to court, and it went to court on March the 19th, and at a few minutes before the trial started, Monsanto settled out of court that they paid the $660. They agreed that they stated that if we were contaminated again tomorrow, we could take them back to court, and also no gag order. And so it was a major victory, because now it opens up for farmers, organic farmers around the world, to take Monsanto or any other company to court if they are contaminated or have damages occurring to their farms or to their seeds and plants through GMOs.
Now, Percy, in what you just described, it occurs to me that you could have called in the Mounties and tried to get Monsanto charged with trespassing on your property.
Well, you see, this is what happens. Monsanto has a very large police force, and in Canada they hire former Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And they'll go into a farmer's land with or without your permission to take samples of farmers' canola crops or soya crops or whatever. And if a farmer catches one of their gene police, as we call them, or one of their investigators in their field and say, "You're trespassing, get out," they'll just laugh at a farmer and say, "Make us get out." And a farmer will say, "I'm going to take you to court and lay a charge." But when the farmer wants to do that, he's advised, well, you know, Monsanto's going to fight you. You might be 4 or 5 years in court. Might cost you $100,000. So farmers just capitulate. You cannot fight a billion-dollar corporation in court. And we often have said we have a legal system in both our countries. But do we really have justice for the average person when you're up against a multi-billion dollar corporation? Because they'll drag you through the court system like they did me,
sure,
costing hundreds of thousands of dollars, 7, 8 years of your life. So farmers just give in and pay up to Monsanto. And Monsanto, in my opinion, takes your freedom of speech, tries to take your freedom of speech away. And your freedom of rights away.
And your freedom to farm.
And your freedom to farm.
We're going to take a break. Percy, hold that thought. We'll get it right after the break. I'm a little late here. Percy Schmeiser is with us from Saskatchewan, and he is a farmer who's taken on Monsanto and won. If you have a question or comment, join us now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, and check out his website at percyschmeiser.com.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA, and pretty boring, and that's good news if you're driving around the Monterey Bay Area this afternoon. 156 just east of South Castroville, CHP reporting a big rig spilled some oil in the lanes. They're on the scene trying to clear some of that up. Drive with caution if you're driving through the area. City streets of Gilroy are only other problem being reported. Foothill Avenue at Wilson Way, a vehicle apparently blocking part of the roadway there. CHP is on the scene trying to get things moved out of there. Highway 17, Santa Cruz Mountain, stalling accident free. Same goes for Highway 68. You are seeing that heavy traffic at the Fish Hook in Santa Cruz with stop-and-go traffic. Southbound 1 from the Fish Hook down to about State Park Drive. South 101 seeing heavy traffic leaving South San Jose from about Coyote Creek Golf Drive. It loosens up once you get down into Morgan Hill. This is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know that a flood-damaged car is like a ticking time bomb? Nearly half of these flooded cars get fixed up and resold. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. That's traffic on KRXA.
Cornerstone Wellness Center in Monterey specializes in reducing stress and pain naturally for you, your children, and even your pets. With 8 professionals, including a doctor of osteopathy, techniques like quantum biofeedback, homeopathy, infrared and ozone steam saunas, and lymphatic drainage are used to help rid your body of toxins, which can cause disease. I'm Sheila Gale, and I've lived with chronic pain for years. Trina Hammack uses state-of-the-art quantum biofeedback and Rolf structural integration. I feel better physically and mentally. Cornerstone also offers ionic foot baths, massage, organic microcurrent facials, and the latest in body strengthening and corrective exercise specifically designed for your body so you'll start living pain-free. Tired of taking medicines? Cornerstone uses homeopathy and top-of-the-line essential oils. Finally, an alternative that really works is here for your entire family. Cornerstone Wellness Center at 1088 Cass Street in Monterey. Call 373-6204. 373-6204.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. You know, it takes every kind of people to make the world go round, including angry farmers. Unafraid of Monsanto.
Said the fight to make ends meet. Keep the man up on his feet. Holding down his job.
We're talking with Percy Schmeiser from Bruno, Saskatchewan. That's Western Canada. And his story is a fascinating one. Some Roundup-ready canola seeds blew into his fields, and Monsanto sued him. He's been in court. He really should get an honorary law degree for over 10 years now. He won a victory at the Canadian Supreme Court, and recently Monsanto settled out of court with him, as he described in the preceding segment, over that $600 charge that he sent them the bill for to clear a field of Monsanto's genetically modified organism, the Roundup Ready canola seed. And Percy, I'm sorry, I had to cut you right before the break. Do you remember what you wanted to say?
Well, you know, a lot of people said, you know, why would you take anybody to court for a $660 bill? It wasn't a $660 or $600,000. It was the whole issue now that they accepted liability. And even though it probably cost me $5,000 or $6,000, to win the case or to get $660, which I should say they had a check in hand when they came to court.
Uh-huh.
It was the whole issue of now, I think these corporations are realizing the situation they are in now with liability. And like I said, I think it was the greatest amount of money, $5,000 or $6,000, to be able to win a case on liability against a corporation.
Well, I think it's a wonderful thing, Percy, and I'm very happy for you. Gina joins us from Salinas. That's a farm zone here on the central coast of California. Hi, Gina.
Hi. I'm not even a farmer, but that makes me just madder than hell. These guys are trying to intimidate everybody. Why can't we make some kind of fund or something, association, or where when somebody, this happens to somebody, you can call for money, you know, like an election,
mm-hmm.
and set up some kind of a legal thing and nail them. I mean, heck, there's more poor people in this world with a couple of dollars or 10 or something than that something should be done.
Well, Percy, has anybody tried to organize a group to support farmers in your position?
Well, the organic farmers here have gone together, but they went under a class action lawsuit, and they didn't qualify under our provincial law. So basically now I've been the only one now as an individual to take Monsanto on the liability issue. But as I said before, it now opens the door for firm organizations or individuals to go to court and have a good chance of winning. I remember saying to the judge when he said, well, to Monsanto, why don't you settle this out of court? And Monsanto's lawyer said to the judge, it's too of an important issue for us. And then he said to me, why don't you just accept it? And I said to the judge, I said, I will never, ever give up my right of freedom of speech or expression. I said, there was too many people in our countries, in both our countries, gave their lives so that we have freedom of speech. And I said, I'll never, ever give it away to a corporation. And that's why I think finally Monsanto decided that they would settle out of court.
Thank you, Gina. And Percy, as you look at this situation long term, are we all going to lose this battle to Monsanto? Is it inevitable that their genetically modified seeds will simply take over?
Well, as long as we can stop any new introduction of GMOs, we have been successful in both our countries for the last 12 years not to allow any new GMOs in. They wanted to introduce GMO rice, GMO wheat, GMO flax, and we have been able to stop it. And believe me, if GMO wheat was ever introduced, it would totally destroy the organic farmers because wheat comes from the grass family. So if they ever get the permission, the regulatory approval from our governments, it's game over, and it'll all be GMOs.
Yeah. Ben in Salinas has a comment. Hi, Ben.
Yes, Mr. Schmeiser, I have to tell you, I totally admire your tenacity, and the issue is the liability for the damage they've done to our national food source. The question I have is this. Today we're hearing about these rice shortages. I don't believe there's a rice shortage, but shouldn't we be looking at the people that bought rice futures in the stock market in the last 6 months and understanding we're being gamed just like at the gas pumps?
Interesting point. Percy, do you have a comment?
Well, you know, I think everything should be looked at quite closely because with the introduction of GMOs, what the corporations were saying at that time, that it would increase yields. But everything else has happened. The yields have gone down, and then a massive increased use of chemicals, maybe 15 times more than before. Now, mm-hmm. They're all talking now about food shortages. And is this another plan by the corporations to increase prices? I don't know.
Well, shouldn't we know if this rice that's being put on the market in the so-called shortage is GMO rice? Shouldn't we know, sir?
Well, we surely should, but as far as I know, it has not been introduced. But a lot of these companies, we have found GMO wheat, and was not introduced to regulatory approval. We have found GMO rice.
Yeah, let me sneak in.
Concerned.
Thank you, Ben. Let me sneak in Barbara in Sacramento. Just 30 seconds, Barbara. Go quickly.
Hi. I just wanted to make your listeners aware of Assembly Bill 541, which is pending in the legislature right now, which would provide protection for farmers in per situation in California. It would.
I'll tell you what, Barbara, I'm tight for time, but if you would email me information on that, I'll certainly cover it in a future program.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank
thanks.
You.
I appreciate your call. Percy Schmeiser, thank you for fighting. You did it for all of us.
Thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to be on your program.
All right, sir. Again, the website, Percy Schmeiser, S-C-H-M-E-I-S-E-R, percyschmeiser.com. We're going to continue after the news break on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at The King of America.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammy McCormick. We may finally be changing our driving habits with gas prices now at a record 3.6 a gallon on average nationwide. CBS News correspondent Ben Tracy in Southern California.
It's no secret that L.A. is built around the car and that people who live here love their cars, even though the traffic is a big pain. But that is starting to change because of high gas prices, and they're very high out here. People are starting to think public transportation might be the way to go. There are double-digit increases on a lot of the subway lines here in the L.A. area.
You could see your tax rebate as early as Monday when direct deposits begin.
This is timely. I don't think Congress has ever done anything this quickly. It is targeted to America's middle class.
And House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the rebate should help pay for gasoline and groceries, but will we spend the money? Here's Mike Colgan of KCBS.
While the whole rebate idea is to stimulate the economy, most of the people we talk to on the streets here say they plan to save it.
The way the economy is right now, you can frivolously spend it or save it for something you really want to do later on down the road.
Actually, we're just going to bank it.
But not everyone felt that way.
Unless you're really a big investment genius, you know how to turn $600 into something. That's like, it's a lot of trips to Starbucks, but it's not much more.
I mean, that's what money's made for, is to spend. And if everybody keeps hoarding it, then nothing will get generated.
Mike Holgan, CBS News, San Jose.
It was a verdict that shocked some. Reaction to the acquittal of three New York detectives in the case of a young unarmed black man gunned down on his wedding day in a hail of bullets. The Reverend Al Sharpton is promising protests.
We're going to be strategic. We're going to close the city down in a non-violent, effective way. We're going to hit the pocketbook.
Two people were killed and more than a dozen hurt today when a tractor-trailer rig smashed into a Chicago transit station. Many of the injured are in critical condition. Chicago police plan a show of force over the weekend after a wave of shootings that claimed nine lives. Mayor Daley called together police, education, and religious officials today for a summit on the violence. The Bush administration's out with its annual list of countries it accuses of looking the other way while their citizens steal American ideas. Here's CBS News correspondent Mark Knoller.
In a new report, the U.S. Special Trade Representative says China, Russia, and seven other countries are not doing enough to guard against the piracy and counterfeiting of American product. Those nations have been put on this year's priority watch list and could be subjected to trade sanctions if they don't toughen enforcement of intellectual property rights.
The State Department's warning the Olympics in China this summer might be an attractive target for terrorists. It's issued a travel alert for Americans who plan to attend the Summer Games. The Japan leg of the Olympic torch relay has started. There is heavy security there, and there are protests. On Wall Street, the Dow finished 43 points higher. The Nasdaq was off 6 points. This is CBS News.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 25% too, only at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store. From April 24th through the 28th, save up to 25% on exceptional paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. But don't wait. Hurry in and save, only at Sherwin-Williams. For painting, decorating, and great savings. At Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You know, a wise man once said, "Do what you love and you won't have to work a day in your life." Of course, small business owners know that doing what you love sometimes involves doing things you don't love, like the finances. That's why more small business owners turn to Visa Business. It has multiple payment options like credit and debit that are accepted at millions of locations worldwide. And it helps reduce paperwork by tracking your finances. To see more ways Visa can help, go to visa.com/small business. Business takes Visa.
FDA advisors have recommended more warnings be given to patients undergoing LASIK eye surgery. Government health experts heard today from some who have suffered blurred vision and other problems after undergoing the procedure. A fatal shark attack off the coast of California.
It happened just after 7 o'clock in the morning here at Solana Beach. 9 swimmers, all members of a triathlon club, were in the water around 150 yards offshore when one of them was attacked. People who frequent this beach are stunned.
Something like this could happen anytime. I mean, I've seen a shark before at Black's. It's pretty intense.
Officials believe the shark that carried out the attack is a great white shark. The beach here and other nearby beaches are closed until Monday. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Solana Beach, California.
We are well into spring, but you wouldn't know it from the forecast in parts of the nation. In Minnesota, heavy snow has fallen in the western part of the state. I'm Cammy McCormick, CBS News.
Hi, I'm the owner of an auto body shop, and since we added Aflac to our benefits package at no direct cost to me, all my employees say the same thing. I want
Aflac.
Since we added Aflac, my whole business is running smooth.
Call 1-800-99-AFLAC or go to aflacforbusiness.com. American Family Life Insurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from your valve stem cover.
Thank you. No cameras. Hold
no, wait,
your applause.
Hold on. You're a what?
A valve stem cover.
A valve stem?
Yeah, I cover the valve stems on your tires.
Oh.
Ah, I know your tires inside and out. Mostly out.
Well, thanks, but I'll ask my Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer about tire inflation, rotation, special offer.
Fine, then I'll just keep doing what I do best.
And that is?
Covering valve stems.
Right.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service. Come in, keep going.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the third hour of the Peter B. Collins Show today. A shout out to our listeners in Portland, Oregon on 620 KPOJ, Seattle, Washington, AM 1090 KPTK, and Missoula, Montana's listening on AM 930. Great to have you all with us. Every week about this time, we check in with Brad Friedman, the citizen journalist who operates bradblog.com. And he is there trying to help us understand election issues and protect the integrity of elections and prevent fraud and those sorts of things. Brad, how you doing today?
I am okay. I'm slightly hectic because I just broke some pretty...
pretty big news at Brad Blog that just seconds before we came on the air here. So I'm popped up, but I'm ready to go.
Is this the Sequoia story or something newer?
This is the Sequoia story, but it's an exclusive update to that Sequoia story.
Well, you better give us the first baseline, and then you can update it.
All right. Well, the skinny and is that today a judge in New Jersey agreed with the plaintiffs in a lawsuit that they may have access to the Sequoia ABC Advantage touchscreen voting machines that they've been trying to get at ever since they failed on Super Tuesday in six different counties. They reported incorrect voting totals, and they failed to fire up on Election Day. All sorts of problems across six different counties. Sequoia had been fighting them tooth and nail to not let the judge release that those machines to some Princeton professors to examine it independently. Today, the judge gave the okay, so those machines will go for the first time to those Princeton professors for this independent exam. So that was breaking earlier this afternoon, but now I've got the additional news if you want that.
But there's more.
There's more. As a matter of fact, I think you've got Dr. Rebecca Mercury lined up. She will also be interested in this news. Hopefully she can hear it.
I think she can. Let's just say hello to her. Dr. Mercury, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Yes, hi. Well, thank you very much for having me on the show tonight. I'm actually speaking to you right here from New Jersey, only a few miles away from that courthouse. And I must also correct Brad. He knows they're not touch screens; they're push-button voting machines.
Oh, you're right.
And,
for that shortcut I often take, but I could have just said crappy voting machines. But
yeah, I would agree with that. I would definitely agree with that.
Well, then, Rebecca, you will have an interest in getting this news that I have added to this Brad Blog update to the attorney out there, Penny Vanitas. I've tried to send her the information just before coming on air, but in the AP report on this on the news today, there's a quote from Michelle Schaefer, the spokesperson for Sequoia Voting Machine, and of course my old friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know her well too.
she doesn't care for me. She talks about the fact that they are currently negotiating with the judge concerning protecting Sequoia's proprietary information. And we believe this result, she says, we believe this result protects both the public's interest and Sequoia's legitimate rights in its intellectual property and trade secrets. However, the Brad Blog can report for the first time that just over a week or so ago, the CEO and president of Sequoia Voting Systems admitted in a phone call, a conference phone call to the entire company, that in fact Sequoia does not control their own intellectual property rights to those Sequoia voting machines. They control the source code, but they do not have control of the intellectual property. That is the property of another company that they were supposedly divested from previously. So Sequoia is busy in court negotiating for its intellectual property rights, which it does not own. And in my story, I've got some direct quotes from that phone call of Jack Blaine admitting that, quote, it doesn't matter really whether we have the IP or not, and much, much more.
Now, Brad, what part of privatized elections don't they understand?
Well, apparently they don't understand much of anything when it comes to privacy, because this information is now available from this confidential company-wide phone call.
Oh, that's great. Well, Brad, you are intrepid, and you bring us the news they don't want us to know.
It's the least I can do.
And I'd like to add in here that in the motion to quash, which I believe was linked on Brad's website, I guess, a week or so ago,
mm-hmm.
When Sequoia, there was this whole lengthy, you know, set of pages with testimony from one of the vice presidents, I believe, and some other people, and they repeatedly mentioned the fact that they have contracts with each of the counties saying that they, you know, that they have, you know, IP protection and, you know, that it's all a trade secret and they can't reveal it. But in fact, I know for a fact in my own Macomb County here in Mercer County. We were told repeatedly when we tried to, ask for freedom of information with regard to those contracts, and we did this well before, this current wave of lawsuits, the county executive admitted to us that they, in fact, did not sign any intellectual property agreements, and they had nothing, actually. So when they were claiming this, and again, as you know, if you know about intellectual property, it's the protection of it that you have to prove that you had kept it private and trade secret and that you had made everybody sign agreements. So we believe that there's quite a few counties. Some counties do have agreements that they signed, but we believe that there are quite a few counties in the state that did not sign such agreements and never had them.
Well, if those agreements are with the Sequoia Voting Machine Company, the fact is Sequoia does not have those rights to negotiate at this time in the first place, as admitted by their own CEO and president.
Wow. So the plot thickens.
Yes, indeed. We're talking with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com and Rebecca Mercury. And, Rebecca, why don't you give us a quick report, some highlights, and then in the next segment we can go into a little more detail. But Brad Friedman was invited to testify before the U.S. Election Assistance Commission's Voting Advocate Roundtable discussion, and you went there as his representative. I have a copy of his statement, and people can read it at bradblog.com. Give us an idea of what the context of this hearing was, and were they paying attention to what you said, or was it just one of these things where talking heads come in and they acknowledge you and read the paper, they thank you for your testimony and just kind of ignore what you said?
I actually thought it was going to be that, and that was my fear. I didn't feel like wasting a lot of time on this. If it was just going to be a pro forma sort of check the box, and yeah, we heard from advocates, and, that's all nice, and pat us on the head and, let us go home. But actually, I believe that it did not turn out to be that. There were three of the four commissioners were there, and Commissioner Rodriguez, Davidson, and Connor were there. The fourth was not there. And also Tom Wilkie, who's the executive director of the EAC, and he's left over from various legacy incarnations of the voting system testing way back to the NACED days. So there were quite a few people who were there, and they were listening very intently, I can tell you. And they didn't actually have them up at the front. They had them actually in the audience. They would introduce them as they came in. So it wasn't like we were sitting at a panel and then speaking to them. It really was a true round table, or more like a rectangle. But they had us sitting around, and we would go around the room and answering these questions and explain to you sort of what the context was. But the fact that we were going around the room meant that we couldn't really have any conversation. So it wasn't like a dialogue. It was just sort of, here's some questions, and then each person can say that, and then you might get one chance for a rebuttal, and that was about it.
So serial testimony, not dialogue.
Right. And there was a, we each were allowed to present a testimony that we could prepare, but then they gave us no time to actually present that. So we didn't actually say that. So we just introduced ourselves and then immediately started answering these questions, which I'll explain in a minute. And then from that, at the very end, they gave us some, each like sort of about 3 to 5 minutes to sum up our general thoughts. But, they really didn't want us to repeat anything that we had already presented in writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people did sort of summarize what they had in writing because they were afraid that people wouldn't read them. So here was the questions, and this was the odd thing. Was that now there's been five of these. Actually, the fifth one, I think, was today, and they were all for different types of roundtables on the same subject. And this, the one that I attended was an election integrity advocates or voting advocates. It wasn't clear what we really all were. Today, it was testers, and today I think it was election officials. So there were all different ones. But they were all asked to answer the same six questions. And the six questions pertain to specific sections in the new, not new, but to, potentially be released draft of the voting system guidelines. It's sort of the testing document that they're working on. This is the 2007 version, but they're still working on it. And it will not go into effect until 2012. So they were asking us to answer six specific questions pertaining to that. And that was the context. And these questions were all really having to do with sort of machinations of the design of these systems, and that's what I really want to, you know, explain to you about these questions. But before I get to that, let me tell you, like, who was there. Really, there were really, in my personal opinion, there were really only election integrity advocates that were really four people, myself and Brad, and of course Brad couldn't attend, and Bev Harris, who refused to attend because she thought that the questions were ridiculous and didn't want to participate in that.
That's Bev Harris from Black Box Voting. Many people know her.
Black Box Voting. Mm-hmm. And John Washburn, who came from Voters Unite. And everybody else who was there, they had their own agenda, but I don't believe it had anything to do with election integrity or voting integrity. Like, Rob Ritchie was there from Fair Vote, and every time he talked, all he talked about was alternative voting methods and IRV, instant runoff voting, and, you know, what you could do with proportional balloting and why these systems weren't, you know, the testing system wasn't fair to instant runoff voting. So people like that, and Dr. Barbara Simons was there representing verified voting, and her testimony was rather frightening because they keep referring to voter verifiable systems, and what she was really promoting, although she said that, you know, verified voting's position is that currently they're really only in favor of op-scan paper ballots hand prepared with accessible ones for, you know, for disabled people. Right. But what she was really promoting was this whole brand new style of cryptographic voting, which I know personally that verified voting has been promoting all along from day one.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really promoting that, as were many of the other people in the room. Larry Norton from the Brennan Center, Mark Scall from the National Institute of Standards and Technology, both of those guys are really attorneys.
Rebecca, let me jump in here. We've got to run to a break. We'll continue in just a moment. That is Dr. Rebecca Mercury. She testified at the Election Assistance Commission on behalf of Brad Friedman, who's also with us from bradblog.com. More in a moment. Your calls are welcome at 888-5-PETER-B, the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
AllEachMounted.com. Get all your receipts online. These paper receipts are killing our trees. 9 million a year, it's just wrong. Everybody,
AllEachMounted.com. Get all CurioseLittleEtronic.com.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Checking traffic on KRXA, an accident coming in for Gilroy. South 101 after Monterey Road, two cars both off to the side. It looks like CHP's on the scene. For the Central Valley, Highway 5 in both directions at 33 and Santanella. Just a heads up, all of the lanes are closed right now. A car took down a power pole. We have live power lines down in the roadway. PG&E is on the scene. CHP is taking northbound traffic off at 152 and southbound traffic being detoured as well. Expect big delays if you find yourself in the area. 17 Santa Cruz Mountains. No stalls or accidents. Highway 68, problem-free as well. This is brought to you by Sprint. Communicate in less than a second and get more done with Nextel Direct Connect. Only on the Now Network. Visit Sprint.com/Nextel for details. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
You see, this cat Chef is a bad mother. What I'm talking about, Chef? She's a complicated man.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 24 minutes after the hour. We're talking about election issues with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com and his colleague, Dr. Rebecca Mercury, who testified or went to have a chat with the Election Assistance Commission in Washington, D.C. this week. And Rebecca, Brad, let me, even though they didn't accept the pre-written statement and allow you to speak it, it was entered into the record and will be ignored from here forward. But Brad wrote a very powerful comment here that I'd like to cherry pick. He says, regarding touchscreen machines, it is literally impossible for anyone to prove that any single vote ever cast on such a system during any actual election for any candidate or initiative on the ballot has ever actually been cast and recorded accurately as per the intent of any voter. I extend the invitation to any vendor or official, including any member or employee of this commission, to prove otherwise and to demonstrate that any such vote was ever recorded accurately during any American election. Now, this is a big challenge, but they ought to be able to respond. And, Rebecca, were these kind of global issues about the problems with electronic voting systems, were they discussed or was it all just nibbling around the edges?
Not really. They were not discussed. And, in fact, there was a lot of discussion about trade secrecy. And one of the reasons why you couldn't prove it is because it's a trade secret. So, you would really, even if you could prove it, you wouldn't be able to prove it to Brad because if, you know, you proved it to him, then, you know, I guess they'd have to
shoot him.
Yeah, something like that. I didn't want to say.
And Brad, would you volunteer for that?
They did. You know, they didn't. They didn't address that. Nor did they even talk about voting. I mean, they really get the whole thrust of this meeting was really to talk about these concepts, which I'll tell you about in a second, that were concocted by this Technical Guidelines Development Commission. It's a committee, part of the Technical Guidelines Development Committee that's part of the EAC, that it's a subpart of it. And basically, one person on that, Ron Rivest, who was at MIT, is an MIT professor in cryptography, and one of the guys down at NIST. And these concepts were concocted as supposedly an answer to being able to prove or, you know, even, you know, being able to have voter-verified paper ballots. They didn't even discuss that.
And if I could jump in for just a second, just to give, because I think I broke in at the top of the show, and we didn't get a chance to give Rebecca Mercury's bona fides here. But in fact, she was the one who, these verifiable paper audit trails we talk about that come out of touchscreen voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
What they've become is what they are now, and nobody counts them, and they're completely useless and everything else. But they were originally came out of a concept that came to be known as the Mercury method. It was, in fact, Rebecca Mercury, who is a computer security expert and e-voting expert, who came up with this method of a possible way to create a voter-verified voting system with these touchscreen systems. But I wanted to throw in regard to, you know, these federal certification standards that she was testifying about at the EAC, Rebecca, you say that it would be a trade secret if they could prove it, but in fact, is there any way, even if they broke trade secrets, is there any way that you know of, as a specialist in this, that it can ever be proved that someone, that a vote was counted accurately on a touchscreen, push button, whatever, direct recording electronic voting system?
In fact, no, it cannot really ever be proved for all intents and purposes and with all, you know, reasonable doubt set aside. And, in fact, that was one of the points of agreement among all the members, including even the fellow from NIST, that they all agreed that, in fact, computers are there, you know, there are certain mathematical properties of them that makes it impossible for you to test them fully to make sure that they're all working properly. Mm-hmm. And we all agreed on that. Everyone who was a scientist at the table and even the non-scientists all agreed that it was impossible to do this.
Now,
so
Rebecca,
go ahead and do it the best we can and accept, you know, whatever failures we have while still telling the voters that every single vote counts.
Rebecca, I have to take a break. Can you stay with us after the break?
Oh, absolutely.
We'll continue in a moment.
Those points that we talked about
here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Our lives are the way they are because we insist upon ignoring one of the deepest truths that has ever been given to us. Hate never yet dispelled hate. Only love dispels hate. These are the words of Buddha from the Dhammapada. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and how honored I am to be with you on Saturday and Sunday mornings here on KRXA 540 AM. At 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to offer to you the alternative to hate and maybe help you understand the, well, the ebb and flow of love and exactly what love can be and do for a person like you and me. The peace we seek in this world is not through politics, religion, or philosophy. It is found in those moments of deep and profound silence where we recognize the truth that hate never yet dispelled hate. Only love can dispel hate. Come and join me. Won't you?
Do you want some downtime? A break from work and worry without breaking the bank? At the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes in Watsonville will give you the breathing space you need. The Spa at Pajaro Dunes is now open to the general public. Spend an hour being pampered with a warm stone massage or European facial. Gather your friends together for a spa party or surprise your sweetie with a couples massage. Stay for a long, lazy weekend in a luxurious condo at the Dunes with 150 acres of beach and wetlands. You'll have your own ocean view and the price is unbeatable. Only a short drive from anywhere on the Central Coast, relief is only minutes away without the time and expense of a long trip. We'll also simplify your wedding plans. Have your ceremony, guests, and special events all in the same place. In nearby Watsonville, at the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes will make your life a little easier and a lot more enjoyable. Call 888-91-DUNES and mention KRXA to get our lowest rates. That's 888-91-DUNES.
Barack Obama for America. Barack Obama for America. His wisdom, courage, and integrity will give us peace and strong prosperity. Our people need a new direction, security and health protection. With global warming creeping up on us, we need a president that we can trust. Barack Obama for America. Barack Obama for America.
America needs Barack Obama. I'm Joan Hopkins, and I wrote this song. Help us play it on radio stations across the country. Go to deltawavepress.com or call me at 831-659-2086 to help America.
My name is Donna Shore, and my husband, Todd Hornick, is running in the June 3rd election for Superior Court Judge. Todd is a loving and caring husband and father of our two boys, Tarak and Nilan. Todd Hornick is a dedicated prosecutor with a sincere passion for the law and justice. He has used his legal career to advocate on behalf of victims of crimes and to secure necessary punishments for those who violate the law and threaten our safety. Todd's energy and enthusiasm for the courtroom is matched by his knowledge of the law. As an educator for the California Department of Parks and Recreation and the California District Attorneys Association, Todd teaches law to law enforcement cadets and experienced attorneys from around the state. My husband, Todd Hornick, has the comprehensive support of the law enforcement community, and he is the best choice for judge, beyond a reasonable doubt. Learn more at ToddHornickForJudge.com.
I'm Todd Hornick, and I approve this message.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from the dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Lots of listeners have been emailing me about Rush Limbaugh's fantasy about riots at the Democratic Convention in Denver. Hey, Rush, take another OxyContin and call me Monday.
Colors on the street, red, white, and blue. People shuffling their feet. People sleeping in their shoes. There's a warning sign on the road. There's a lot of people saying we'd be better off dead. Don't feel like Satan, but I am the lamb. So I try to forget it.
And the Bush administration has taken another strong position in favor of honest elections in Kenya. Yeah, they're saying Mugabe's got to go. How about that Bush regime, huh? We continue our weekly update on election issues. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with us, and also Dr. Rebecca Mercury, who was there for this conversation with the Election Assistance Commission in Washington just a day or so ago. And we've got a caller on the line I want to get to in a few minutes. Andy is a New Jersey resident who has some comments. But, Rebecca, I promise to give you a chance here to give us another update on this event in Washington. So go ahead.
Right. So these ideas that have been concocted by the EAC / TDGC and NIST, basically the top one is a thing called the innovation class. Basically what they have decided is that the standard that they're writing is completely incapable of dealing with any brand new type of voting machine that somebody could come up with. So if we came up with one tomorrow that was really fantastic, they wouldn't be able to test it because it doesn't necessarily fit and conform to the standards that they've created. So basically, although they're saying it's not intended to fast-track new innovations, it is intended to fast-track new innovations. And basically, they're saying that they don't know how to test them, and they will need to sort of slip them by under this innovation class so we can get new ones certified. And I basically told them that that's ridiculous. What they really need to do is rewrite the standard. And one of the EAC commissioners did admit to me afterwards that she said she also heard this in one of the testing groups that they had in as a roundtable discussion, too. So other people are saying this. So this innovation class is sort of ridiculous. But the reason for the innovation class is to implement the idea of software independence. Now, if you hear the word software independence, and then you're talking about a computer-based system, it's an oxymoron. You can't have something that's independent of software if it uses software. But they've created this ridiculous definition of software independence, where if something is software independent, then any flaws in the software that aren't caught, if it happens to change flaws in the vote count at the end, then that's not software independent. But you could have software in it that may not affect the tallies at the end, and then we'll call that software independent. Well, that's ridiculous. As we well know, once you have software in a system, you can do all sorts of denial of service attacks, and software independence is ridiculous. But when you read Barbara Simon's testimony, which she didn't really speak about this much when she was there, but when you read it, it's on the website, she speaks about this thing called independent voter verifiable records, IVVR. So we've added yet a new kind of thing, like VVPADs and voter verified paper ballots. But the scary thing is these IVVRs, because first of all, they're not verifiable. And second of all, the thing is that they're not ballots, they're records. And third of all, they could be some cryptographic mumbo jumbo that's all just, you know, they wave their hands over it, they say, oh, it's good cryptography. And now we'll have these independent voter verifiable records. And that's really what's being pushed down.
Mm-hmm.
There is a great push on the part of the election community to continue with computerized voting, and that really is the goal and the direction. And this has been on the table for a long while.
And Rebecca, that leads to my question here, which is the mission of the Election Assistance Commission to take every means available to preserve computer-based voting against all of the criticism and the vulnerabilities that we've identified?
Well, that sort of came up because really the EAC really doesn't do anything. They're the ones who certify things. The testing is done. But the EAC actually, they just use the same people that have been doing this all along. So is the EAC really doing anything, or are they just sort of a shill for the same group that's led by Tom Wilkie and the same people that he's had working for him all along who are rubber stamping these voting machines that are going through? And that was brought up, I must say, by John Washburn, who's the only person who had the courage to mention that this is really what's really going on in the certification. And then they immediately, as soon as he said that, they said, we need to adjourn for lunch, and we all had to get up and leave.
All right. Brad?
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, what is really going on here, and what is the EAC really doing?
And that's the question that I tried to speak to in my testimony, which is at bradblog.com, along with links to everyone who participated, their testimony, including Rebecca's, and basically tried to speak to the fact that, look, they've got this 598-page monster document called the Voluntary Voting System Guidelines for 2007, by which all future voting systems will be certified or not by the EAC at the federal level. And with all of that stuff in these 598 pages, which I joke about in my testimony, that, you know, this could get us to the moon and back, but it can't do it can't do the simple task of adding 1 + 1 + 1 in a way that citizens, and we were called to, by the EAC, to a voter advocate roundtable. So voter advocate voters, you know, cannot see the way their vote is being counted, and therefore cannot know. It has literally become impossible for any citizen to know that their vote was counted accurately. Not a rocket scientist like Rush Holt, not a computer scientist like Dr. Rebecca Mercury, not even a former programmer like myself. We should not have to rely on experts. We should not have to trust or believe anybody. And that's what at least I tried to speak to in my statement, and the point that I hope we tried to get across to these folks who are, you know, twisting and torturing all of these technical definitions when they mean absolutely nothing to the voter, Peter.
Mm-hmm. Let me jump to Andy in New York, who claims to be a New Jersey resident. Andy, welcome to the show today.
Hey, thanks a lot, Peter. Hey, thanks, Rebecca and Brad, for all the work you're doing.
Yeah, they really dig into that wonk stuff, don't they? So that we don't have to.
Sorry,
that's for sure.
I'm not sorry. I'm just
well aware of what went on as far as voting goes, and Deborah Bowen trying to nail down the problems, and Busby, Brill Bray, what went on there, Jennings Buchanan, the Wynn Edwards stuff. And when I went in to vote in November in New Jersey, I told them, I'm not voting on a machine. You got to give me paper. I'm not doing it. I don't trust it. And they looked at me like I was from outer space or something, like they'd never seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote an editorial that did get published in a local paper. It was a pretty nice-sized editorial piece. Citizens must demand an accurate vote count, which goes into a lot of detail. It's also on the web. You could access it by Googling. But the education... vibration level here, you're dealing with a bunch of Neanderthals. They do not understand the problems with electronic machines. And I just voted last 2 weeks ago in a local election. And again, I told them I would not vote on the electronic machine. So, you know, I've written to all the local assembly Senate people in the state, and I got a call from my assemblyman the other day, and he told me, I don't believe in the merit of your argument at all, but we did pass a bill that we are going to retrofit the machines that have a voter verifiable paper trail. Unfortunately, it won't be done till 2009 after the presidential election.
Well, and Andy, let me add, that bill that they've written and those paper trails they're talking about adding to those voting machines make those machines absolutely no more verifiable after an election. There is no way to know, even with those paper trails. And as I said, it was Dr. Mercury herself who sort of came up with the original concept for those. It is impossible, even with those paper trails, to know that those machines counted those votes accurately. I'm sorry your congressperson doesn't realize that.
Well, also, because they never look at the paper trails, for one. I've been in cases in California and Ohio where they have the paper trails, and they never look at them. And even when you go to court, you don't get them to look at them. But the other thing was that your congressperson probably didn't say was that the law actually said they were supposed to have these in place the first of January, and again, because of Sequoia and the lawsuits and all this stuff, they all delayed it, and then the local House, you know, the state House of Representatives and the state Senate, they voted to extend it to April, and then they voted to extend it again because they just refused to stand up to Sequoia. They refused to say, let's get rid of this and go with OpScan. Now, one good thing I can tell you as a New Jersey voter, and this is what I do, I won't vote on these machines. You can, though, register as an absentee voter. You have to register for every single election as an absentee voter, and you have to fill out the form every single time, but then they will give you a paper ballot, and I actually drive it down to the county and drop it off on election day, so I at least know it got there and I prepared it by hand. You can do that, but that's not what everybody should
right.
be doing.
I did do that in one election, and as a matter of fact, the assembly person, which is Kevin O'Toole's office, who called me, swore up and down that if I signed up for the absentee ballot, I would get it every election. But
you don't. It's not. It's true. It's untrue. They've lied about that.
Right.
What you will get is an application, and you will only get that application in the November election,
that's right.
the general election. So they've lied about all of this. You know, it's very tragic. It's really tragic.
It is. And I've lived in other states where you just signed a permanent absentee ballot and you got it by mail every time, no hassle.
Exactly. We have 5 elections this year. I wrote them all on my calendar, and then a month before, I have to apply every single time. And I do this basically to annoy them. When I come in, and I drop them off by hand to annoy them, because then you sign the book in there, and they all go, oh, hello, Rebecca. They know who I am. The police officer escorts you into the back, and then you drop it off, and they put a little time stamp on it. Whatever happens to it, I don't know, but at least it got to that stage, which is more than you can say with the electronic voting machine.
Hey, you know, I saw the War of the Worlds, and I happen to know New Jersey's the only place we know the Martians have actually landed.
That is true, and we reenact that every October, actually.
All right.
So come on up to Princeton, and we'll you can see the reenactment, and we'll be very happy to have you there at the reenactment.
Andy, thank you for your call today. Good to hear from you. Rebecca, thank you very much for joining us with an excellent report on, your activities in Washington, and be sure to submit your expenses.
Yes, I will. Thanks very much for having me on.
Okay, great to talk with you.
Thanks, Rebecca.
And Brad, you stay with us. We're going to update the anomalies of Pennsylvania and see what else is breaking on the Brad blog today. More in a moment here, and if you have a comment or a question for Brad, bring it on now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Checking traffic one last time this week on KRXA, and not a whole lot to tell you about. One new accident, Rio Del Mar southbound, Highway 1 after Rio Del Mar Boulevard. Solo spin out in the center divide, CHP should be on the scene. An older crash in Gilroy, South 101 after Monterey Road, two cars, that's in the final clearing stages off to the shoulder. And we were telling you about a crash in the Central Valley, Santanella, I-5 at 33. Vehicle hit a power pole, knocked power lines down across all of the lanes in both directions. Good news, all of the lanes are now open, but heavy delays as you approach the scene in both directions. 17 Santa Cruz Mountains, no stalls, no accidents. And 101 as you make your way through Salinas, looking pretty good right now. This is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know what happens to cars that are wrecked in Monterey? Well, about half the cars are salvaged, get fixed up and resold. Ask your used car dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. Have an awesome weekend. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Spring has sprung at All Class Transportation, and the All Class Transportation team is offering awesome spring savings to KRXA listeners for all of April. Call All Class Transportation at 831-582-9338 to travel in the ultimate in comfort and style. For example, a party of eight can rent an All Class Transportation luxury limo for the bargain basement price of only $55 an hour. That's right, folks. I said only $55 per hour with a one-hour minimum. All Class Transportation also has luxury SUVs and sedans for even less, and again, with a minimum time of just 1 hour. If you are looking for an airport drop-off or pickup in Monterey or San Jose at a great price, look no further than All Class Transportation. For additional information, call the All Class Transportation team at 831-582-9338 or email them at allclasstrans@att.net. Times are yard to yard. Gratuity is not included. And vehicles will be rented subject to availability. Remember, for all your transportation needs, call Marina-based All Class Transportation, TCP 22978-A at 582-9338. That's 582-9338.
Newsflash, just in. Now through April 30th, every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, All Class Transportation is only $50 per hour with a one-hour minimum for an eight-passenger luxury limo. Wow, unbelievable. Call now and reserve your limo before it's too late. All Class Transportation, 582-9338.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Ray of frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, sponsored by Polly Point Press and John Gorenfeld's new book, Bad Moon Rising. It's all about Reverend Moon and that Washington Times propaganda machine. And for a preview, get on the web and look at the video. It's at thekingofamerica.com. And we continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. And, Brad, before our memories fade, Pennsylvania was just a few days ago, the primary, and there were some unusual occurrences, some problems with electronic voting machines, long lines in some precincts, voters denied the opportunity to cast a ballot, at least on their initial morning schedule. Maybe some of them returned. But it seems like there were serious problems, but the corporate media has said everything. Things fine.
That's exactly what they said, and there were serious problems even beyond the way you described them there. In fact, voting machines were breaking down all over the state, particularly notable in Philadelphia, where each precinct has only two voting machines, and what they have, as we learned, a ridiculous scheme that if one of them breaks down, no matter how long the lines get, and they had record turnout there, they will not give out a paper ballot unless both machines break down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once they break down, they will give a paper ballot, but it will be a provisional paper ballot, not an emergency paper ballot, but a provisional, which, therefore, may or may not eventually be counted. It's unbelievable. And during the break, actually, I was just reading, someone sent me some transcript of some of the reporting that was going on CNN, where they had state officials saying there were no reports of irregularities, at the same moment that we know for a fact that hundreds and hundreds of calls were coming in to voter hotlines complaining about downed machines and everything else. And I'll try to run some of those transcripts perhaps over the weekend at Brad Blog. But
and Brad, on those the hotline, we heard numerous reports that nobody ever answered, that people called and they got voicemail or they just got ring, ring, ring. Is somebody finally answering the phone there?
Well, it depends which hotline I suspect you were calling. I do know that they outfitted Rebecca Mercury, who was at one of those precincts in Philadelphia, had told me that they had given cell phones to each precinct in a nice little envelope with the number ready to pre-dial if there were any problems. So they all had cell phones, but what they didn't think ahead far enough was to realize that if everyone had problems at the same time, there wouldn't be enough people to answer them. And apparently those poll workers were trying to call back to the county for information, and they were getting busy signals or nobody was answering. So on the other hotlines you refer to, the voter hotlines, I don't know if people were answering them. Well, I know that they were answering them, but I suspect they, too, may have well been overwhelmed by the number of calls that they were getting.
Yeah. Now,
and you wouldn't know it from looking at the media, of course, because they all seem to say that everything was fine. The state was out there telling people that there was no problems. But, in fact, we ran a problem wire throughout the day at Brad Blog, and we have you can scroll down and you can see dozens and dozens of reports from the media where, you know, the headline would be voting goes smoothly, and then the story would be about how hundreds of people were turned away from the voting booth because the machines broke down.
We have a lot of irony in the media like that. There was a report from Baghdad the other day, and Condoleezza Rice was saying how great things are, things are calming down, it's getting better, and the next paragraph was about the repeated attacks of mortar and other rockets on the Green Zone. So we deal with these kinds of dualities a lot now. Brad, up on the homepage there at the Brad Blog right now, you have a screenshot from Pennsylvania's Department of State, and this was early in the evening of Tuesday when votes were coming in, and they show a summary bar at the bottom where Hillary Clinton is shown getting 52% of the vote, and then there are three separate entries for Barack Obama, each one showing 47%, so they had about 198% turnout.
Yeah. Actually, he got on one of those bars 47.2, another 47.4, and on the third one where he received zero votes, that apparently amounts to 47.5% of the vote in Pennsylvania. Yeah, I want to give proper credit here to Brad Blog reader Matt Sersley, who noticed this, who was smart enough to save off a copy of that HTML page, and then furthermore followed it up this week with a phone call to the Pennsylvania Department of State to ask for an explanation of what happened, why Hillary was listed once, and Barack Obama three different times with three different numbers. He got confirmed from the Department of State of the problem. They said that it didn't happen, it's never happened before. And they further said, however, it made no difference in the totals. It's unclear how they know that, but that's what they said. And, in fact, Matt Sersley also recorded that phone call to the Department of State and shared that, and we've got that audio up. Just another one of those anomalies, I guess, that apparently nobody is interested in reporting other than the Brad Blog, because the woman at the Department of State said that Matt, who called on I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, he asked, you know, has anybody else called about this? And she said, nope, you're the first one.
Wow.
Yep.
And do you see any opportunity here for recounts or audits, or will the certified vote be different from the announced result, which the media is calling a double-digit victory, and you and others have correctly pointed out that 9.2% is not usually considered a double digit?
No, but there was a little bit of a math anomaly here that kind of allowed Clinton to make that claim. because she, in fact, got 54.6% of the vote, which rounds up to 55, and Obama got 45.4, which rounds down to 45. Mm-hmm. So she was able to trumpet 55-45 victory, and apparently the mainstream media was all too happy to repeat that meme. No, there really is no chance for any recount or anything. 85% of the votes cast in Pennsylvania were cast on these electronic touchscreen machines, which are completely 100% unverifiable, and there is not even that crappy paper trail that we talk about so much.
Yeah.
These are, machines are fully paperless. So, in fact, there's nothing to count.
Mm-hmm.
It's 100% faith-based election, and they push that button, they come out with the numbers, and we're expected to say, okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
That's what it's come to here.
It really has. Well, Brad, thank you for an excellent report. It's been a busy week for you, and I hope you take a little time off and unplug and recharge.
Oh, what are the chances of that, Peter? Hey, one more just to let you know. It is official. The last of the touchscreen voting machine makers in New York State has withdrawn their attempt at certification. New York State will be all paper ballots.
For the fall election, November?
That's a good question. No, I'm not sure if it's going to be for November or not, to be frank. I think it is, but we'll see, because those machines are being made by Sequoia Voting Systems, and they've got a few problems.
You're just always trying to buck up my confidence. I love it.
It's the least I can do.
All right, Brad Freeman, BradBlog.com. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, sir. That's it for our show today.
Happy trails.
Thank you for listening. If you liked it or didn't, drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. Share a podcast with a friend. The link is on the homepage at peterbcollins.com. My thanks to Katrina Rill and Brian Urban.
Keep smiling until...
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family,
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say,
and puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Gas and oil prices at record highs.
We don't go out to dinner. We buy gas instead.
Americans are feeling the pain at the pump, and there's not much optimism things will get better. Consumer sentiment is at its lowest level in 25 years. Reporter Alexis Christophorus.
The more and more we hear the bad news, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You start saying, well, my situation is not so bad, but if everyone else is hurting, maybe I should be worried. And the bad news definitely starts to feed off itself.
Things are so bad, utility companies are cutting the power to more Americans who can't pay their bills. Jim Ullman is credit administrator with Wisconsin Public Service in Green Bay.
We serve around 500,000 residential customers, and at the end of March, we saw that 65,000 had an arrearage balance. 25,000 of those were in a severe state, which means that disconnection or limiting service was a possibility.
Congress and the White House hope those tax rebates will help stimulate the economy, but with so many bills to pay.
With the first stimulus tax rebates going out Monday, up to $1,800 for a middle-class family of four, members of Congress praised their own work in moving so quickly to get the money out, but they're already fighting over what to do next.
The strain of the economic downturn on middle and low-income families demands, in my view, consideration of a second stimulus package.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats say much more is needed, including making government-backed mortgages available to people at risk of foreclosure and extending unemployment insurance. Republicans and President Bush are opposed. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
This is just a tragic
traffic accident.
Two people are dead and several critically injured after a truck plowed into a Chicago transit station this afternoon. Ron Hooverman's a transit spokesman.
There is very significant damage to the station. The escalators are collapsed, but the overhead structure is sound.
Workers were combing through the wreckage looking for more victims. Chicago police will be out in force this weekend, hoping to prevent a repeat of the violence over the past several days. It's claimed 9 lives. Some churches will keep the doors open during the evening hours to protect people from gunfire. Millions of Americans have had the procedure, and it's improved their vision, but future patients will hear more warnings about possible side effects from LASIK eye surgery.
Experts say in the vast majority of cases, LASIK